The stream is not currently working. Go to tunein.com to find the station and report the problem.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing, and it is cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to the 10th day of September 2012. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid, and what we do here, we could like to call conversation radio. The Horn is available easily across a wide variety of platforms on the interweb tubes. Remember, it's not a big truck. You can get The Horn simply by going to headonradionetwork.com and clicking Listen Live at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. That will take you directly to the live program. During the rest of the day, it'll take you to the rerun stream, which goes pretty much 24-7 unless our internet web tube service thingy here craps out on us. And we try to get it started again as soon as possible in those instances. It's a very small operation. No, that's the easiest way. You can also find the link to the stream at whiterosesociety.org, where for around 10 years now, Ben Birch has literally been saving progressive radio. whiterosesociety.org. We're available also at TuneIn Radio, one of the more popular, as I understand it. One of the more popular progressive, liberal, what have you, radio programs there at TuneIn. They're also available at Stitcher Internet Radio and at Tuner Internet Radio. Still working on DAR.FM, but hopefully that'll come along in due time. Go ahead and say it and get it out of the way. The Horn is an enterprise that is entirely listener-supported. Entirely. If y'all don't do it, there ain't no show. Ain't no Horn. Ain't no program. And with that in mind, we rely upon your contributions via the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com or the snail mail address, which is equally available there under the tab Contribute. If you look, if you go and you look, you will find that this is, well, as I explained on Friday in a show that can only be, best described by our buddy Scott in Sweden, he described Friday's show as gloomy. And it was. It was. There's no getting around it. But if you look at the target bar on the front page of The Horn, headonradionetwork.com, you'll see that we're halfway to taking care of the month of September. Now, in order to make that an accurate number, you need to subtract about $320 from that, because part of that was the airfare for me to get to the Fighting Bob Fest that was just put in through PayPal and was not part of ordinary monthly fundraising. So we're almost to halfway. And that's good. Because this will be a shortened week. My apologies. We will have a Moran Monday show tonight. Yes, I have not forgotten, because we've got some Morans in the offing. And we will have a show tomorrow night for Titanic Tuesday. But no show on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. I am in the air to Wisconsin. And Saturday is the Fightin' Bob Fest, and we are still working on details to see if I'm going to be able to at least stream the Fight and Bob Fest festivities. If there are interweb tubes available in the venue, I will try to stream the addresses and the and all the pertinent the addresses, the plenary sessions, I guess you would call it. But that's an all-day affair on Saturday. I fly back to Washington, D.C. on Sunday, and we hope to have regular shows Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, etc., unless one of them happens to be a travel day. So that's the schedule going forward, and I hope we don't fall behind in fundraising, because, as I explained, the outlook has become rather grim going forward. All the funding sources that we had that made up, that we used to make up shortfall, buy groceries, things like that, have dried up. And as such, just keeping this on the air is going to become a Herculean undertaking. And toward meeting that goal, I will tell you this evening that our dear friend, good friend, Dr. John, formerly of New York, now of North Carolina, has put his monthly $50 challenge on the table. In other words, John has $50 that he will match the first $50 that come in any combination, so that some combination of $50 in contributions becomes, via John, Dr. John, becomes $100. And that would be monumental. So that's what hopefully will happen this evening. Dr. John's challenge, $50 to meet the first $50 that come in, thereby turning 50 into 100. John having noted in offering this month's challenge, he said earlier today, trying to call it up here. Come on, little computer. There we go. Yeah. He said, that's the impetus. I can't lose a forum where I can say impotence with impudence. And really, when you stop and think about it, how many of those are there? I'd like to think that this program probably has a higher vocabulary score than most others. You know, it was announced that Michelle Obama's convention speech 2 weeks ago, or last week rather, it all runs together after a while, Michelle Obama's convention speech was actually written, or graded out, I should say. I don't think it was necessarily consciously written, but it graded out on a 12th grade level. That is the highest, the absolutely highest that any First Lady's speech has ever graded in the history of First Lady's speech making at political conventions. By the same token, and this really does tell you, it probably tells you more about the perceived audiences for the speech than it does about the speech makers themselves. Whereas Michelle Obama's speech was delivered at a 12th grade level, which really is, when you consider that fully one-third of American high school students do not finish high school, that's pretty ambitious at 12th grade level. On the other hand, the lowest ever vocabulary level for any First Lady making a speech at a political convention was also delivered this year. It was delivered by Bishop Willard Romney's wife, Anne. who delivered a speech whose vocabulary level was at the fifth grade. What does that tell you about audiences? I think it's fairly obvious. The Republicans, when they give a speech, they have to talk really, really slowly and use little itsy bitsy teensy tiny words. And they probably have to speak with pronounced lip movement so that the morons of the Republican Party can understand. I like smart. And as a consequence, I favored Mrs. Obama's speech. Not to mention the fact that, as noted in a previous program, I don't like having some millionaire's wife explain to me how her marriage is more real than mine. F you, Ann, okay? Just saying. Or go to hell. Or Kolob. I don't give a damn. Smarmy, smug. I'm sure that was incivil, wasn't it? Oopsie! But that's why, I think we probably do have a little higher level discourse on this program than, any right-wing program out there. Because a right-wing radio person, again, just like Ann Romney, has to use little bitty monosyllabic short words so as not to confuse the morons. Right? Right. So where do we go this evening? Oh, that's easy. That's real easy. Oh, by the way, have you ever been to the headonradionetwork.com chat room? It's free and easy. Headonradionetwork.com/chatroom, registration, boom, you're right there. And the room is filling up. Greg's come in. Jug of Punch is there. Our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky, are there. Sal's there. And more will wander in as the program progresses. We're liberals. We're progressives. We're not necessarily going to be standing there pounding on the doors right there at showtime. We wander in at our convenience. No, really. I have not forgotten what this day is. No, not at all.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know. Morons.
That's right, hurry, 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 step right up, right here, for less than 5 cents per hour of programming. You, too, can gaze behind this thin cybernetic veil of cybernetic canvas. It's Moran Monday on the Horn, and you can't tell the Morans without a program. This, of course, is the program that tries to tell the Morans, the only problem being you just can't tell a Moran much. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. Women and small children are advised to, women are advised to hang on to their purses, men to their wallets, and small children, they just won't be admitted. No one will be admitted to the Moran Monday tent show for the first 5 minutes. Head for the hills and you'll be up to your armpits in Morans.
Oh, God, ain't it the truth. I'm just here, Sandra, now. Yeah, you're going to have to keep that circus music going for a while, Bob. Jesus. Yes, yes, yes. For our first Moran this evening, I'm torn. Do we go with Piyush Jindal? Emmett C. Burns Jr. No, really, Mr. Burns. Excellent. Do we go with Mr. Burns, or do we go with Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist? I'm rich, I'm comfortably well off, I'm socially secure. my first inclination is to go with Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. I may be a coward, but I'm a greedy coward. I don't know who the person who booked Rand Paul opposite Paul Krugman was, but they've got a future in booking wrestling matches and stuff. That was unfair. But no, it really did happen. It happened on Sunday. On this morning, ABC's This Morning or This Week with George Snuffleupagus and that guy who frequently wears bow ties and waxes rhapsodic about a brand of baseball that stopped being played about 70 years ago. They booked Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, opposite Nobel Prize-winning economist Paul Krugman. Like you, my first thought was, well, that ain't a fair fight. That's like shooting libertarians in a barrel. Which is what Paul Krugman kinda, you know, did. It's not just that Rand Paul was wrong, or that Rand Paul is a moron, which he is. Aqua Buddha and all that shit. Rand Paul, in his ignorance, didn't realize how ignorant he was. And that rises to the level of, like, ancient Greek theater. The one where there's some part in the play where where the protagonist or the anti-hero or whatever the hell it is the analysts are calling it these days, it looks up and goes, huh? What? And Rand Paul had one of those moments Sunday. Jesus, it was good. This is another one of those moments where the onion edges ever closer to reality and reality edges ever closer to the onion. It could be like matter and antimatter when the two things finally converge. The discussion, however, was Jobs. You know, we have to spell that J-A-W-B-Z-Z-Z-Z-Z-Z-Z. Jobs. And, you know, Rand Paul, being a libertarian ophthalmologist, knows all about Jobs. Because, after all, ophthalmologists must continue to receive Medicaid, because, after all, ophthalmologists deserve to be comfortable. He said that, really. And the conversation turned to a discussion of employment in the public sector. You know, government jobs. And there was Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, caught with his pants down and the back of his underwear back up over his head. I mean, did you ever notice he looks a little like a character out of Beavis and Butthead? Because he does. And he was behaving like one, too. Never mind. Let's just go to the audio.
But no, the fact of the matter is, all of us who are serious about the numbers, me, for example, warned from the beginning that this thing was going to be inadequate. This has come out pretty much the way that the analysis that underlay the program said it was going to turn out. And as I say,
now bear in mind we're discussing at this point the stimulus, and who you're hearing is Paul Krugman, sitting next to Cokie, smarter than all of you rubes, Roberts, and one chair down from the guy who likes to talk about baseball and wears bow ties.
You know, Obama had a filibuster-proof majority for a few months in 2009. Ever since, before and after he's...
Now, I do disagree with Dr. Krugman on this. President Obama never had a quote-unquote filibuster-proof majority. Never. Because in order for that to happen, you would have to include people like Mary Landrieu, Ben Nelson of Nebraska, and the thing on his head, and at one point in time, Blanche Lincoln in the modern, you know, she's Joe Manchin with not quite as good hair. In other words, he never had 60 people who would vote as a block. Remember, early on in the Senate of the United States, it was Blanche Lincoln and Ben Nelson who stopped something that had been promised to the American people. That was the Employee Free Choice Act, EFCA. Otherwise, in little monosyllabic terms, known as card chick. I will remind you that I was present for a question and answer session on January the 21st, 2009. Guy James was there with me when Harry Reid, that man with a spine made of jello, promised that the Senate would pass the Employee Free Choice Act by summer. He meant summer 2009. Summer 2012 has come and gone, and still no Employee Free Choice Act. Well, he couldn't get it because he could not control his own caucus. He could not control his own so-called majority. He could not get Ben Nelson or Blanche Lincoln, the senator from Walmart at the time, to sign on. So, to that extent, I disagree with Dr. Krugman's assertion that there was at any time ever a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate. Just say.
Based scorched earth opposition.
But there's a reason that they lost in 2010, which is the people weren't happy with the, what we were doing on. And so, you know, you can't separate those things.
But you cannot
things.
Run.
But it is
this.
Also true that the reasons that we're seeing this slowdown is that businesses are not sure what's going to happen.
It's the business uncertainty meme. Your businesses just don't know. Tomorrow the zombie apocalypse might happen And then, the only people making money would be the ones who were selling stuff for getting it brains. Business uncertainty, the economy, the business just doesn't know if the sun is going to come up tomorrow.
Oh, shut up.
Of this fiscal cliff that is we are facing.
But who created that?
This is the part we've been waiting for. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, is sitting on the other side of the table, and he's just waiting to school us all and splain it to us. Oh, splain it, Rand. Splain it.
You're arguing that the government sector is struggling? Are you arguing that there are fewer government employees under...
No, really. I'm going to shut up. I want you to hear this part.
You're arguing that the government sector is struggling? Are you arguing that there are fewer government employees under Obama than there were under Bush?
That's a fact.
No,
that's
I think the size of growth of government is enormous under President Obama.
If government employment had grown as fast under Obama as it did under Bush, we'd have 1.5 million more people employed right now directly.
Just are there directly less people employed or more people employed now by government?
Now, if this was a perfect Warner Brothers cartoon world, Rand would have followed that up, that question. Are there less people employed or more people employed now by government? He would have followed that up by saying, Mother! God. This country has hemorrhaged. This country has hemorrhaged jobs in government. But Rand Paul didn't know that because all of his little teabagging pals have been hollering, government's the problem, gotta get government off our backs, and if we don't, we'll bring guns! We got some guns! You want us to bring our guns, Rand? We can bring our guns! Because we got Second Amendment remedies! Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Taking an early lead on this Moran Monday. But not far behind is Piyush Jindal, governor of the state of Louisiana. Stan? Governor Piyush Jindal, whose favorite character on the Brady Bunch when he was growing up was Bobby. And therefore he named himself Bobby instead of Piyush. Don't know if that was before or after he started doing exorcisms on women being held down in apartments in college. Yeah, that really happened. They held down an innocent young woman against her will and performed an exorcism on her. And Piyush was the exorciser. I can just imagine him walking around her slowly with candles, one in each hand, saying, "Marsha, Marsha, Marsha, be gone, foul Marsha." I don't know. He has inserted himself. That's just gross. He has intruded. No. He has. Piyush Jindal, governor of the state of Louisiana, Stan, has involved himself in a lawsuit that he has no business in. There's a bit of a Donnybrook of a legal nature going on in the Supreme Court of the state of Louisiana, Stan. It concerns a Louisiana Supreme Court Justice by the name of Burnett Johnson. Burnett Johnson is a woman of color. Next year, the sitting Chief Justice of the Louisiana Supreme Court is retiring. The next person in line in terms of seniority is Burnett Johnson. Burnett Johnson began serving on the Louisiana Stan Supreme Court in 1994. The next person in line is Jeffrey Victory, and old Jeffrey didn't join the court till 1995. Here's where the court case comes in. The old guard, shall we say, of Louisiana Stan does not want Burnett Johnson to become Supreme Court Chief Justice in Louisiana Stan because she was appointed to the court in 1994 as a result of court action that resulted in a settlement with the federal government over the fact that Louisiana Stan was filthy with racial discrimination. And as a result, the Louisiana Supreme Court was expanded from 6 members, which was loony in the first place. Having an even number of justices on a Supreme Court is just begging for trouble, to 7. And that 7th seat was filled by Burnett Johnson in 1994. She has the most seniority. Well, Piyush Jindal has filed a legal brief saying that Burnett Johnson should not be allowed to become the Chief Justice of the Louisiana Stan Supreme Court because that year that she spent as that seniority that she gathered up because she was appointed to the court shouldn't count. No, it was one of them affirmative action appointments. And, you know, you shouldn't get seniority from affirmative action. You know. Therefore, we need a good, reliable, dependable white feller being Chief Justice. Sheesh. What's the reasoning? What's the reasoning? Oh, you're going to love this. Piyush Jindal offered a statement. It was put out there by the lawyers that he hired on the nickel of the people of the state of Louisiana Stan in a case that where that nickel did not need to be spent. It was just Piyush getting up in the middle of something that he had no business in. And the statement says, the issue on appeal... Wait a minute. Remember how he gave that response to the State of the Union one year and he talked a little bit like some sort of, I don't know, cornpone Mr. Rogers? The issue on appeal is not who should serve as the next Chief Justice, but whether the Louisiana Supreme Court should be prohibited by a federal court from interpreting the state's constitution. In other words, what he's arguing, Piyush, is states' rights. This is the same argument as Attorney James Williams, the attorney for Burnett Johnson, said. That's what the proponents of slavery said during the Civil War. It's an age-old excuse. And James Williams is, of course, correct. We don't want the federal government interpreting the state of Louisiana's constitution if that means that a Negro is going to be our chief justice. I mean, I'm about as brown as anybody needs to be to get into state government in Louisiana. And Lord knows I'm not one of them. That's why I took up the name Bobby. Because I don't want people remembering my name's Piyush. Look at all the trouble our president, their president, he ain't mine, has got into by using his Muslim name. You think I'd ever got to be governor if people knew my name was Piyush? Hey, Bobby! And if I have to, I'll start calling myself Ricky Bobby. Kind of favor that movie anyway. Jesus. Burnett Johnson has had to go to court to simply get her tenure on the court validated and acknowledged. What does that tell you? It tells you that ain't much changed. So, you know, we never really have a vote or anything, but we do have, I think we come to a consensus by the end of the program as to who was the bigger moron. Right now, Piyush versus Bobby. Ron and Raleigh noting, hey, Bob, you got to stop talking about the wannabe future president of these United States, Rand Paul, like he's some rube from Kentucky. Aqua Buddha forever, man. Cokie Roberts has been up my ass forever. She needs to retire. She doesn't need the money. She's comfortably well off. Rand Paul, 2016, baby. That's why Ron was sitting on his hands while his delegates was getting screwed, blued, and tattooed at their little clavering a couple of weeks ago. Marty with an incisive question. What does it say about Jindal that his favorite Brady Bunch character was Bobby? Mine was Marcia for obvious straight male reasons. Yeah, I know. Same. I mean, that's not a comment on Piyush's sexuality. Maybe it's because Bobby was the little one, the one that was always kind of not the sharpest one. You know, there was Peter competing with Greg, and Bobby was just kind of out in the cold. Maybe he identified with Bobby's underdog ways. Who knows? But there are a lot of those little pop culture moments where you can make some value judgments. It's kind of like the old who's your favorite Beatle question. You know, the people, you knew the people that said Paul, well, you just knew. And then the people that said, oh, I like Ringo. You knew that they were just high. And then it was always a choice for me between John and George. It is. It's More In Monday on the Horn. Your nominations are more than welcome. Since we're not going to have a prayer meeting Wednesday edition, I've got a nomination. What is this clown's name? Father. Oh, what? Father Dwight Longenecker. Hopefully we will get to him later in the program. He's a full-on, used to be an evangelical, then he became an Anglican priest, and then that wasn't weird enough for him, so he done run off and become a full-on Roman Catholic priest. And he writes some weird right-wing crap. Such as, I'll just go ahead and put it out there for you. In something he posted about a week ago called A Tale of Two Nations, he wrote the following. Basically, the two nations that he's speaking of, he says that half the country believes in God, and the other half are going to hell. He says, when I say they believe in God, talking about the first half, what I mean is that they believe in the Judeo-Christian God, a God who's alive and well and active in the world. They believe their religion is revealed by God, that it is not a human construction. They believe that they are answerable to God, and therefore they believe in personal responsibility. Huh? They believe that every human being is created in God's image. You know, didn't do none of that evolving, you know, because that might make us, that's all Africa and stuff, right? I mean, just saying. They believe that every human being is created, that each person has a right first to life and then to self-determination and personal freedom. Freedom to do what is right and follow the commandments of God. That's some freedom, following commandments. And then there's us. This is what he has to say about us. The other half do not believe in God. Or if they profess belief in God, he is not this God. If they do not believe it, by the way, I read some of his other crap too. And if you don't believe in transubstantiation, where when you eat the little saltine and you take the little sip of cheap-ass wine, if you don't believe that really, really, really miraculously turns into cannibalistic flesh and blood in your tummy, you're going to hell. The other half do not believe in God. Or if they profess belief in God, he is not this God. Maybe it's, I don't know, the Mithras or Ahura Mazda or Zeus or the Huitzilopochtli or the Kukul Khan or pick one. Maybe it's that one that sits around munching peanuts. I don't know. If they do not believe in God, then they cannot believe. Follow this. Anybody who's ever had a formal logic class, you're gonna love this. That's why I saved it for More and Monday. If they do not believe in God, then they cannot believe that man is created in God's image. Okay. They can only believe that man is a product of random evolution and is therefore caught up in a random sort of fatalism, his destiny determined by his genetics. This person, you know, I've never met anybody who understands the idea of genetics and thinks that environment has nothing to do with it whatsoever. But this is, you know, this is one of those sad, sorry, sick priests who's been so miserable all his life he could never find a faith and stay with it. And so he's had to spiral ever downward until he could find some level of autocratic authoritarianism that he could live with, because he can't live on his own in the world with his own mind. They can only believe that man is a product of random evolution and is therefore caught up in a random sort of fatalism, his destiny determined by his genetics. This person, okay, this is the part that got his nom, this is where he got nominated. This person who does not believe in God can also not believe in the dignity of man. For him, man is an animal, and if he therefore behaves like a beast, it is only to be expected. We will find such people to be increasingly full of irrational rage and hatred against God and his people. The believers will tolerate the unbelievers, but that tolerance will not be reciprocated. Yeah, right, because, you know, all the atheists are out there burning down churches just left and right. Funny. Let's see, Stalin was associated with the church, Hitler was baptized in the Roman Catholic Church, Pol Pot was some sort of a Buddhist. Yeah, funny. Not just a hell of a lot of murdering atheists out there. But this goober says that there is. I am an optimist, and I dislike talk of the coming persecution. Aw, come on, Father Longenecker. You masturbate to thoughts of the coming persecution. Murder me, my lord! Ooh, ooh! Nail some sense into me! Death cult. That just pisses me off to no end. This person who does not believe in God can also not believe in the dignity of man. Where the... did that come from? That's just straight up out of whole cloth. If man is the measure of all things, then the dignity of man is the standard dignity by which we measure the rest of the world, is it not? Ray says, I believe in evolution. I believe in God. I just don't think God had a deadline. Oh, by the way, I mentioned the Employee Free Choice Act. Andy with a comment noting, in the 2008 Democratic platform, we had card check proudly sitting as a working class plank in the platform. It was removed in the Charlotte 2012 platform by coincidence, according to a local NPR program, Your Call. You might ask why. He answered that, Bob. It was Walmart. Walmart told the Dems, get it out of there. The compliant anti-worker Dems, the people more than willing to walk on the picket line with their best walking shoes. you know what you're saying there, Andy. With Walmart's request. Note, Hillary Clinton provided Walmart with legal services and participated on its corporate board. By the way, Cokie Roberts is an Ivy League piece of top 1% excrement. How'd you like her repeating the Republican talking point? There's too much business uncertainty. That's all that was. We can't have job creation with business uncertainty, can we? I'm sorry, Cokie. There's always business uncertainty. That's why business is forecast. Much of NPR has followed the corporate media, going right over to the right-wing cliff, the Attila the Hun far right. Thanks. Signed, Andy. No. Andy, thank you, and say hi to Boris for us. Boris for us. Ooh. So it's about 17 minutes before the hour, and it is more in Monday. Let's open the lines up for your nominations. You know the number. Area code 304-658-3333. And toll free if you need that, 877-443-2366. Onward to Dystopia, noting from the chat room, shh, Andy, those things must only be discussed in quiet rooms. Yeah. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
Onward Dystopia, good old bit. You gotta know Swiss Met is Moran Monday, Captain Moran Monday.
Well, I was getting to his nomination, but yes, do please.
Yeah, he certainly is. He just is. Until November, and then he could get on his spaceship and we don't have to talk about him anymore. But you gotta go with, you know, only the goddess of irony could deliver us Rand Paul. Did you happen to catch the other thing Rand said regarding roads and how business enables roads and not the other way around?
Do who? What? Now, I did say how I did catch a little moment of ironic truth coming out of his mouth, Brother Albert. I did catch where he said that the Republican policy is let's bomb everybody tomorrow. That was a moment of just delightful. I guess he has maybe... I don't know, what's the tiniest bone in the ear? Is it the hammer, or in the body, the hammer, the anvil, the stirrup, whatever? Those are the tiniest bones in the human body, so he's got one teeny tiny bone of honesty about him, right?
No. No, of course not. It's the blinking 12 on the friggin' VCRs, right, twice a day.
Okay, that too.
That's what he is. He's nothing other than, he's reprehensible in every way, shape, and form. Oh, good, good, good. I'm glad you're against war. That's awesome. Why are you against war?
Right, for the wrong reasons. Oh, because it's bad for business.
Well, yeah, you don't want big business, you know, using up all the population before you have a chance to have your own fiefdom, and, you know, you can have your own private army, and, you know, because it's never enough. You know,
What do you want to bet Rand Paul plays Warcraft?
I don't know what he plays. He plays Atlas Shrugged, the mud. Anyway, he's a ridiculous person in every way, shape, and form. And that priest, you know, I think you nailed it when you said, you know, the goddess of irony, of course the goddess of irony is going to make a fool like that profess, you know, at least three fates are the only true ones. You know, I mean, she weaves the time threads like that. It's a beautiful thing. It's just in awe. And if the mask keeps coming off,
I think she had to fold space, Albert, in order to get a guy from the 9th century into the 21st.
It's the goddess of irony. How dare you? Have you no faith, Brother Bob?
I'm steeped in this stuff. I'm dipped by the heel.
Yeah, goodness. Well, man. You can't get any better than this, and I wish, you know, I wish President Not Sure was a little more sure, but, you know, he's got my vote. He's got my support, you know. I mean.
Yeah, even as bummed out as he made me with that clean coal comment, I tried to make clear on Friday evening, you know, I'm there. I'm voting for him.
Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Right? He did say that, and I was waiting for it. That was the only time coal was even mentioned, from my recollection. I didn't catch all of it, but that was like the only time coal was mentioned. But the good news is I heard geothermal mentioned many, many, many more times than gas. And I mean, yeah, they said gas and oil a whole bunch just because, you know, they're going to get attacked on that, and they're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to say, well, no, you know, we've actually upped oil and gas production. Da 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 da. And, you know, this is just the sausage. You know, this is the crap that everyone cringes and hates. But you know, at the end of the day, drones are still better than carpet bombs and invasions. You know, they can get all outraged that, you know, Obama's sending money into Afghanistan to rebuild it. They can't even mention Afghanistan. You know, and, you know, as Gurney says to Paul, you know, will we have peace? And Paul has to say, we will have victory. And we will have victory. We might not have peace. We're not going to be quite there yet. We still have a long way to go for people to even just wake up and realize what the hell is going on this planet. You know, I think they are. And we have to thank the morons, because the morons are being so true to themselves. How attractive is that? It's not attractive to anybody. You know, I mean, and if anything, if voter turnout was low, it was going to be low because of, you know, lack of enthusiasm, the fact that they pulled their mask off has put, you know, the willy jilly is up in everyone's butt, and now, you know, I mean, come on, you don't want that. You know, Obama may not be going completely, you know, back on the freeway over here, but goodness gracious, at least he's not going there. They want to go into a caldera and start doing donuts. Get out of here with those guys. They want to go back to where we were. They were Bush on steroids. What? You know, I'm going to give Obama a little leeway. We have no other choice, you know. Third party, we ain't got a choice there. That's not a choice. You know, it just isn't. It's sad to say, but it just isn't. So we have to kind of change this beast from within, I feel. You know, we have to continue going forward. I mean, and I'm not trying to be Obama bot thinks this, Obama bot says this. I'm not trying to be like that, but what other choice do we have?
Albert, I don't think anybody can ever accuse me of being an Obama bot. Or you. No, this is just a matter of politically having one's eyes open. And you know, you walk up to the video game voting machine and it says Barack Obama, and it says Bishop Willard Romney.
Mm-hmm.
and you stand there and you look at it, like if you stare at the screen long enough, I Want a Pony will show up on the screen. Well, it's not. It's just not. No. I mean, there'll be some other names, you know, some yahoo from the Constitution Party, some goober from the Libertarian Party, you know, but it's, that's all, as long as we exist, and this is systemic, this is not philosophical for me. If they, you know, if we had a government that allowed for proportional representation, that and we had a parliament where people would, you know, I mean, it goes back to, for instance, that conversation that I had with a member of the Green Party over in Germany, where he said, look, we want, and remember, we're talking here, Brother Albert, about Germany, who, while I was there, passed the 50% solar generation of electricity mark, okay? He said, and I mean, I kind of wanted to go, oh, stop it, quit rubbing it in. But I didn't know if the idiot, if the metaphor would carry over in German or not. But he said, you know, the Green Party wants a greener Germany. And he said, but we are never, and this was a member of the German Green Party, okay? I mean, this guy, you know, people take his calls and stuff. And he said, the Greens are never going to be the majority party in Germany. And so even somebody who has a proportional representation system understands that there are limitations on it. But we don't even have that. And so that means that no matter how many other vanity candidates appear under the Republican and the Democrat on the presidential ballot, ain't none of them never going to be, and I know what I just did to the language, I'm a professional, don't try it at home, going to be president.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen. You're going to get a Republican or you're going to get a Democrat. You pick.
Yeah. And the whole thing is, you know, I mean, this is another thing we have to work on Obama's second term, is to, you know, kind of minimize the power of the executive. You know, I mean, I know a lot of what he's done regarding civil liberties and, you know, this program and that program has given people the willies, you know, so hopefully we can put a little pressure on him to, you know, kind of...
You know, Jeremy Scahill made I love Chris Hayes's program, and Jeremy Scahill made Chris Hayes visibly uncomfortable this weekend by talking about drone strikes.
Yeah.
And I think it's okay to talk about drone strikes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a badly needed conversation about, I mean, there's drone strikes, and then there's drone strikes against American citizens who have not been convicted of a crime. And, I mean, that's...
And this is why I think it's a nuanced thing. Yeah, right? All right. So he wasn't convicted of a crime. He was in Yemen.
Yeah, at the age of 16. At the age of 16. He did not get there by himself. He was there with his daddy.
I know. I agree. And I don't know if he was the target. And that's not cool. I mean, I don't think that's cool at all. But that's why you get queasy. You know, we're only getting queasy because we're looking at the one. And we're over here fulfilling Stalin's prophecy of one death is a tragedy and the million is a statistic. You know, I mean, okay, remember, what was his name? Ahmed with no arms and legs? Do you remember, I mean, you know, all the pictures of Iceman and his crying wife and freaking kid? I mean, I know it sucks. It really, really does. It is a shit sandwich. Our military-industrial complex is so deep and so vast and so overwhelmingly, and it was already in motion. These things are going to be used, and what the hell can we do about this?
Yeah, okay, and you know, that there was a very impressive, I guess you would say, sort of tongue-in-cheek piece of video that was shot at the Democratic National Convention, with a whole bunch of Democratic dignitaries running like hell from a person asking one question. I guess you probably saw it.
Yep, I saw it.
Is Bishop Romney, and of course I call him Bishop Romney, they said Mitt, but is Bishop Romney ready for the kill list?
I'm just gonna
ask this question because I have a history of asking it, Albert, because I asked it about the Patriot Act back when the right wingers were, well, we gotta protect America, that's why we need the Patriot Act, that's why we gotta listen in on your aunt's phone call where she's giving out the secret the Mississippi mud cake fudge recipe. That's why we gotta be listening in on that. I mean, we've got millions of dollars tied up in it, billions of dollars tied up in this, in them super Unablab 10,000 computers down in the basement of the NSA. We gotta be listening in to you on your auntie's recipe conversation, because she might be talking about terrorism code. Right? I remember when they were saying all that, and I said, okay, cool. I'll take everything you just said because you trust George W. Bush to do it right. Damn right, he's a Christian that I'd like to have a beer with. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, cool. How are you going to feel when Hillary, this is before Barack had come on the scene, how are you going to feel when Hillary's got that power? Oh, by God, we'll have, Congress will just have to make sure she don't abuse her power none. I said, yeah, hope in one hand and in the other and see which one fills up fastest. So the same question applies going in the other direction. You hate the kill list.
Mm-hmm.
And I say this for third-party voters. You hate the kill list mm-hmm. in the hands of Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
How would you feel with it in the hands of a guy who is a bishop in a church that thinks it's going to have a whole bunch of private planets and this life don't matter much know-how. So, you know, they can just give the drone kill list to Bishop Willard Romney and he can zap a few American citizens and then just pick up the phone and out in Salt Lake City somebody will get in the dunking tank and they'll throw baseballs at it until he goes in the water and comes up and boom, the person who just got killed in the drone attack's been baptized into the Mormon church and he's off on his planet somewhere. Right? How are you going to feel about that? That's going to be a real hoot.
I certainly agree. And I think, I think we all saw the excesses with the hand that Bush had. And just to repeat what Mitt Romney's own words or close to it, Mitt Romney will be George Bush on steroids. And I believe that.
And you know, there is a resolution to this drone business. And that is to have a Congress that takes its job seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that that's going to require more than most members of Congress have in them. And this, I will use this moment for a digression into that that deadly dull ancient history for which I am infamous. When that young punk named Octavian got done putting down the rebellion from Mark Antony and Cleopatra and all of that crap, and he finally got to where he could consolidate power in Rome. You know what he didn't do, Albert? Didn't declare himself emperor. He said, I merely want you to call me the first citizen. And so he would go and sit in the Roman Senate, and the Roman Senate would sit there and debate for a while and come up with stuff and they'd say, how do you feel about that, first citizen? And he'd say, yeah, I'm not so crazy about it. Okay, we won't do it. How about that other? Yeah, I like that. Okay, that's law. But he wasn't the emperor or nothing.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so that's where the Congress is right now. The Congress has the power to declare war. We haven't declared a war since December 7, 1941. We've, let the first citizen do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, I mean, there's a way to do this stuff. And Ron and Raleigh writing in under the subject line, due process, goddammit, says this isn't the first time that he's disagreed with you. He says, and he wants to know, Albert, so you believe once you leave the confines of the U.S., it's Ali Ali oxen free, drop a drone strike on his ass? Due process be damned?
No. Hang on. This isn't like that. It isn't going to, Saint-Tropez and, he said something bad in a post. That's not how it is. Please, go watch the front line, Al-Qaeda in Yemen. Just go watch it. And then see, it's not quite, the Brits over there. It's not Met, Club Med. This isn't, Al-Qaeda is now turned into an army. And I believe, and I've said it before, that what that just means is the end of them. The minute that any kind of organized structure is going to be put in front of the United States military's war machine, this is what you're going to see. And it's just going to be a decimation, and period. But that doesn't change the fact that Al-Qaeda owns part of Yemen. They have cities in Yemen. There are cities that are fighting Al-Qaeda in Yemen. Yemen is a mess. It's a complete and utter mess over there. And this is where these drone strikes are. They happen in Pakistan? Sure they are. Of course they are. Is it cool? No, I don't like anybody innocent getting killed. I'm never saying that, and I'm never going to say that.
Well, you know, here's my problem, Albert.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, here in the United States, we had a lot of inspiring talk at the convention about the Dream Act and about how we are not going to punish children who were brought here not of their own free will, and we're not going to keep them from trying to achieve the American dream.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about, you know, 16-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, what do we do with a kid whose daddy took him to Yemen, in which he had no choice, and we ran a Hellfire missile up his ass with an American citizen into the, you know, the Dream Act kids, and I'm not trying to equate the two, but I'm trying to say that there is some sort of a parallel conversation that should be had.
Mm-hmm.
I want the Dream Act kids to have the possibilities of full citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
I am very, very liberal on immigration issues.
Mm-hmm.
By the same token, however, if the Constitution means what we think the Constitution means, and all that due process and equal protection stuff applies, then we really do have to have a serious serious conversation about the use. I mean, do you remember when we got so upset with the Bush administration because they were kind of playing fast and loose with the National Surveillance Court? And we said, you know, you can't just bypass them. You can't just go and spy on people because you really want a new recipe for brownies. Or you think that recipes for brownies might be code for some Al-Qaeda plot to turn your local Walmart into a smoking heap of rubble.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do that. And all of us progressives, all of us liberals, were talking about that.
If I can just address real quick, I mean, if I may.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you said a few things there, and, you know, like, all right, the kids, right, and the versus the Dream Act kids. All right, well, what if Arnold Schwarzenegger's father was, you know, emigrated to the United States before World War II? Arnold was born in the United States and then goes over there and joins the SS. And in the course of that event, Arnold's house happens to get bombed because they identify it as, you know, his father being an SS officer's house. And Arnold dies and never becomes the governor, never, you know, wins Vietnam for us or anything like that. As a culture, you know, it's kind of war. It's kind of, it sucks. It's not, I'm not in condoning of it, but it is kind of war. I didn't start it. I wasn't for, you know, you talk about the Dream Act. What about the kids in Afghanistan? I believe we've been speaking long enough to know that you know my position on Afghanistan.
Yeah.
I wasn't for going into Afghanistan at all. And for no reason. Why?
I still want out.
Kids. But here's the thing. It's broke. It's already broken. It's on fire. Put it out. Fix it. Make it better. Give them books. Give them education. Give them some sense of self-worth so they have more.
Yeah, did you see the New York Times article over the weekend?
Which one?
The one about how things in Afghanistan are going to get worse, not better.
Of course.
Because of that story we were talking about a year and a half ago. Remember the story that said vast deposits of lithium had been found in Afghanistan?
Yeah.
Now the slaughter is on.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're trying to control the access to that mineral wealth, and they're not ready to extract it, but they want to get in position to be ready to extract it, and they're willing to kill. And oddly enough, one of the places that they are working hardest is, lo and behold, Bamiyan Province.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Bamiyan?
Yep.
Where the 1,000-year-old Buddha statues were blown to smithereens by the Taliban because they were offensive unto the nostrils of their imaginary sky creature?
Mm. Well, they were, yeah, it was offensive to the way that the University of Tennessee and the Pakistani ISI wanted them to feel and create that kind of little world over there for them. You know, I still remember that, too, and it's true, you know. So do we want a president who's going to say, oh, yeah, lithium, let's get it no matter what, or a president who says, yeah, lithium, we need it, and what else do we have? And, oh, I heard this thing about carbon. What can we do about that? Carbon? Oh, you mean like what I fart out? No, we don't need that kind of guy, and that's the thing. What's our choice? What's our choice? My choice is to vote for Obama and to, you know, sit there and work on him and try to let him know. You know, I mean, you think he's going to get through another 4 years ignoring the cannabis issue? Really? You think he's going to get through 4 years, keep, you know, he's not going to be able to do that. That's why, in a sense, the culture, we need to move in that direction. It's not the promised land. It's not the friggin', you know, we're not there yet. You know, we're not there. We're just simply not there yet. It's, time has not progressed far enough. But if we go into the direction that Romney's choosing to go into, you know, I mean, is it hyperbolic to say that it's going to be a complete shitstorm? I mean, I remember the Bush years. I mean, we barely got through that. We're still not out of that. We're still in it. We're going to go back into it? I mean, there's no choice. There's really no choice here. And I got, you know, there's a lot of reasons to praise Obama. We can all be honest about that. There's reasons to criticize Obama. That is true, right? There are no reasons. I mean, but there are more reasons to vote for Obama. You know, there are no reasons to vote for Romney. There's no reasons to support Romney. And what? I mean, that's just, you know, that's just how it has to be. I'm sorry. You know, we don't have a choice, and like you were saying earlier, we're going to have my pony, so let's work on it, you know? I mean, geothermal plant can, you know, is $400 million cheaper than a clean coal plant. There isn't a clean coal plant yet. They keep talking about it, but that doesn't mean it's going to happen. You know, we still have time on these things. You know, and that's what we need. We need a little bit more time. We need somebody who doesn't think climate, you know, change is fake. You know, and thinks it's a joke. You know, I support that. You know, I don't agree with everything, but when have we ever seen a candidate we agreed with 100% win? When? It's never happened.
No, you don't get
those.
And
if it does, you might want to be a little worried about what you think. You know what I mean? Right, Adolf? You know? Oh, he's just for me. You know? If you knew Stalin like I knew Stalin, oh, what a world this would be. Right? We don't want that. We don't want that. We don't want that. We want somebody with their finger on the pulse. We want at least pretends to look like it is. Doesn't, you know, sit there and get giddy over, you know, a million dead. It's civilians, innocent civilians, destroying, well, yeah, there's plenty of targets in Iraq. Yeah, do you know who Mitt Romney is bringing in as his, what's his name? What's that guy's name? Clover, what the hell's his name? What's his name? The bad guy. The rendition guy, Topher Black.
Oh, Topher, yeah.
That's Mitt Romney's security advisor. Oh, we can torture them in such great ways, my lord. Oh, yeah, show me the pictures. It's going to be terrible. Remember that? Who got the pictures first? In Abu Ghraib. Who got them?
Yeah.
Yeah, come on. We all... Oh, yeah. Oh. Give me another heart. I need another heart. Ooh, give me the pump. These people, the neocons are back. They ain't going nowhere. So, yeah, I hate the drones. I hate this. I hate this. I hate being over there to begin with. But what are we going to do? We can't just break it and then turn around and pretend it didn't exist.
Well, you raise an interesting question there, Albert, because do you remember, you know, tomorrow being September 11th and everything, do you remember after what happened 11 years ago happened? Do you remember that they put out a manifesto saying, we did this because you've got bases on our sacred Saudi sand?
Mm-hmm.
You remember what George Bush did after that?
Mm-hmm.
We pulled out of the sacred Saudi sand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
The question arises, mm-hmm. and this is, you know, this really is a deep and abiding question. What would happen if we got out of there and minded our own business? But that is a problem because we deem that our business, emphasis on the word business, wants us there. We're not there for national security. We're there, especially in Afghanistan. You know, we kind of wrapped up the oil business in Iraq, so it was okay to leave. Now, we have not wrapped up all that mineral wealth in Afghanistan, so it's not okay for us to leave, because American business wants us there. Or not even American business, but global transnationals want us there. And we want to make sure, the global transnationals want to make sure that they can get at it instead of the Chinese.
For this, yeah, I know.
Right. I mean, onward to dystopia, noting in the chat room, he says, I'm not going to vote for Obama, but instead I'm going to be voting against Romney. And frankly, That works too. So, Ron and Raleigh's a bit head up. He says that there's not much likelihood of the Yemenis jumping on their boats and airplanes and coming and invading the United States, because they don't have the wherewithal and probably couldn't if they tried. But is deeply disturbed by the due process implications and of killing an American citizen. Now, I think, of course, about, for instance, the Spanish Civil War, and I'm sure you know your history on this too, Albert. We had, comparatively speaking, a whole bunch of American lefties sign up for something called the Abraham Lincoln Brigade.
Mm-hmm.
And they went and they fought in the Spanish Civil War on the side of basically the communists and socialists and the people who were anti-fascist. I mean, it was the class, you know, that was the, you know, the Spanish Civil War was a little microcosmic model for what would later become World War II. It was fascists against anti-fascists. And the Abraham Lincoln Brigade, made up of an international cadre with a lot of Americans in it, went to fight on the side of the anti-fascists, and a lot of them died. And they were, I think, heroes. But, you know, when they were getting slaughtered, I don't know anything in American, I'm not aware of anything in American history that says that we went over and intervened on their behalf. So, on the one hand, if you go over and you join up with, Jesus, I hate even saying Al-Qaeda because, well, you know. But if you go over there and you fight on somebody's behalf, bad things may happen.
I mean,
the thing is, I think we have to at least acknowledge that in the case of that 16-year-old boy,
mm-hmm.
who had not, as with your analogy, who had not gone and jined up, as in the hypothetical Schwarzenegger,
mm-hmm.
you know, he was Muslim, he was an American citizen, but he was taken with his father,
mm-hmm.
because his father, in that monotheistic, paternalistic order has the say-so. You know, so if mama says, I don't want my baby going to Yemen, he says, shut up, woman. I am the man in this family, and the boy is going with me.
Mm-hmm.
And the boy gets dead.
Mm-hmm.
And that is on the father's head. But he also happens to subscribe to a weird-ass version of that religion that says that the kid got, you know, some sort of eternal paradise as soon as the Hellfire missile exploded. But the thing is, there's that. But I'm enough of a lover of humanity. I want to reject that Looney Tunes Catholic priest who says that, you know, that I think that we're all just animals. I don't need his weird-ass, smiteful God
mm-hmm.
to tell me that it's wrong to rain down hellfire missiles on a wedding party.
Yep.
I don't need his weird-ass, smiteful God to tell me that there is something criminal in forcing a man to dig the remains of his baby daughter out from under the rubble and carry it out for the world to see what the United States has done. What is done in my name is blood on my hands, and I acknowledge that. It is similar. It is not the same. It is similar, however, to a story that I tweeted earlier today, namely a story out of the New York Gladesh. This man had become a thorn in industry's side because he was trying to get some degree of basic human rights for people working in sewing factories. And these were sewing factories, of course, that sew shirts and pants for people like Nike and Tommy Hilfiger that people will claw each other over here in the United States and pay $100 a shirt for something that costs 10 cents to make in Bangladesh. And it creates a very frustrating situation for anyone of conscience to realize exactly what it means when we put on that clothing with those logos on it, that we are participating even remotely in this case, a murder. You know, and there's that sense of remote participation in a murder with regard to the 16-year-old Al-Awlaki boy.
Yeah. And, well, Coca-Cola, right?
Yeah. Chiquita Banana.
Yeah, Chiquita Banana. I mean, it's... I mean, goodness gracious, it's not... what are we going to do?
Well, I think we can't simply say this is the way things are. I have respect for the people who are willing to raise this issue.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
But by the same token, you are not going to make this issue better. And then I think maybe this is the thrust of what your argument is. Tell me if I'm miscasting it, Brother Albert.
Sure.
You are not going to be making it any better by putting it in the hands of a religious lunatic from the right wing who thinks that they've probably got it coming, and anyway we'll baptize them into our religion afterwards, and then they'll participate in the full ordinances of the church, and won't that be groovy?
I mean, yes. If you let them win, you give it up. You give up your issue. Then your issue comes back burner, and it puts it on the back burner. I'm tired of these issues being on the back burner. We've been talking about these issues... union killings and this, da-da-da, and corporate this and corporate that. We've been talking about that for so long, and it is a crime, and it's ongoing. God damn it, why aren't more bankers in prison? It just never ends. But it's definitely going to end, or it's going to take a lot longer if we let Captain Swiss Mitt over here get in there, period.
Well, it'll only get worse. And the larger question that surrounds all of this, Albert, is this question of how long it's going to take before we're going to realize that we're a freaking empire and that we're going to behave like empires behave.
Well.
Okay, we've got a Congress that is largely a debating society. And the hands, and the real reins of power have been placed into the hands of one man who can have it for no more than 8 years, tops 4 years at least, barring some sort of terrible circumstance. You know, I go back to that signature line that I use at the bottom of all of my emails, the one from the prophet Kurt Vonnegut, peace be upon him. I think I just added Kurt Vonnegut to our list of prophets.
Oh, he's been there, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. But what he says, a normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous, industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all.
Mm-hmm.
How much time is there in this world? And we are very cleverly diverted, are we not, Brother Albert? How much time is there in this world in which we have a moment to simply look around our space and say, Jesus, look at all the horror and oppression I have surrounded myself with? When I read the New York Times story about the worker, the organizer in Bangladesh, I thought, Jesus Christ, I've got a hand in this. And so I started looking around, and I grabbed my pants, and, yeah, it wasn't made in the United States. And I grabbed my shirt, and it wasn't made in the United States. And I grabbed my shoes, and they weren't made in the United States. And I looked over at because I'm trying to watch my blood glucose, I can have, like, 2 M&Ms, okay? And I looked at my bag of M&Ms, and I went, Christ on a crutch. How many people are oppressed to get that cacao from the cacao bean farms? And about that time, Agnes walked in and said, I made you a cup of coffee, sweetheart. And I thought, oh, shit. You know, how many coffee farmers were abused so I could have this cup of coffee? And what we don't do, but what we don't do is make those spaces in our lives to contemplate what it means. And once we've contemplated what it means, then, anarcho-capitalist marketplace doesn't want us to have any alternatives. How do I find a pleasant T-shirt or a decent-fitting the pullover or a pair of jeans that isn't just absolutely soaked in profiteering blood? How do we do that? That's not there. Because it's not in the marketplace. It's been driven from the marketplace, Brother Albert.
Well, hang on. You don't think... I mean, Mittens doesn't buy shirts made in India. Unless his wife's going to Costco to make him appear more human.
No. Bishop Willard probably has a little Hong Kong tailor who lives there in the mansion who makes his shirts.
And so goes in, embroiders all those Masonic symbols. And I mean, you know, you say, you know what? Yeah, all right, you know. There are fair trade options for all these things, and that market only keeps growing and growing and growing. You know, coffee, chocolate, sugar. I mean, it goes on and on and on. You know, it just, you know, where they're paying these people a fair price. Black gold, I told you about this document years ago.
But you have to work your ass off to find them.
But see, today, but here's the thing, you know, today is when we start looking around. This is why the market of fair trade is getting, you know, it's getting to be a big, right? Organic, right? That's why all of a sudden they're all trying to do organic now. Even though it's not organic, they just, you know, we put organic chemicals on it. So you even have to understand that. The mere fact that you're aware of these things and you're opening your eyes shows you that everybody else is too. And people sit there and they do care about them hell. They care about their choices. They care about these things. Nobody wants to sweatshop anything. I mean, who wants that? I don't want that. I don't purchase that stuff for my children. We don't buy those shoes. I don't buy that coffee. I don't purchase it. If I can't afford it, I go without it. I vote with my dollars. I do the only thing that I can do. This is the, I mean, this is my thing. I'm only a little person here on this planet that we're here for a blink of a blink. And we're here on this spaceship, and I'm going to try to leave this spaceship better than it was when I got here, in a better direction. I want to see this spaceship last us long enough till we have to evacuate it and we have the technology to do so. You know, there's no reason that the human species has to die. There's no reason that the human species has to stop evolving. You know, these kinds of things are slow, methodical things. But everybody's going to say, right, the speed is picking up pace, right? The technology increases, all these things. Yeah, we're going to fight over lithium. They're fighting, all right, China's using soft power, right? And they're using their soft power to kind of get Africa developed because they want rare earth materials. In 2 years, we'll be done. We're not going to use rare earth minerals anymore. I mean, what happens to a paradigm when in 2 years we don't even need lithium anymore? What happens? You know, if you don't think carbon can do it, please. The same way you're going to find that fair trade T-shirt and that, you know, ecological responsible choice regarding your food is Google. Go Google it. You don't believe me. Go look. You know, carbon is the next material. That's a beautiful thing. That's an awesome thing. And I want to see that. But I mean, we're going to go double down on Bush days. Come on now. We just can't afford it. I think we're winning. I think we're getting there, Brother Bob. I think we're moving ahead. Yeah, it's not as fast as we want, but, you know, it's going. We're getting there. You know, I don't know. You know, I mean, I'm outraged like everybody else about all these things. You know, of course I am. But, you know, you gotta vote, you gotta talk, you gotta do the things we gotta do that we've been talking about for how many years.
And when you go to the, and I think corollary to that, Albert, is that, again, and I don't know if my constantly talking about this, maybe I'm not explaining it properly, maybe I'm not making sense, but I'm trying, is to understand that the Constitution as it was written is treated and has been treated down through the years as a minimalist framework into which we must fit our present ambitions. And the ambitions of the United States are to remain an empire. We are at that point in the 21st century where we are clinging to the notion of empire. And as such, things like due process, I mean, my God, I've referenced it before, and people are probably bored, but, you know, the Fourth Amendment didn't take a roasting beginning on January 20th, 2001. The Fourth Amendment had been on life support and coughing up blood on the porch since the days of the Burger Court, okay? And since things like U.S. v. Leon and the creation of good faith exceptions for violation of the Fourth Amendment. Okay, this is the Constitution has been something that we have sort of we've shoehorned things in, and we've hooved it out to sort of wedge empire into. This is empire, okay? It just is, and it does not bear any resemblance whatsoever, except for the fact that the first goal is always to protect the wealth. It does not bear any resemblance whatsoever to the Constitution as it was written and adopted and ratified. Okay? with, as I said, and I want to reiterate this, with the exception that the Constitution was created as a means whereby the 1% of 1787 could make sure that the 99% stayed in their damn well places.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything gets wedged in with that in mind. It changed, and this is not a screed about the Civil War. We're not going to refight Gettysburg, none of that. Everything changed with the rise of the administrative state. Everything changed with the rise of the railroads and the steamboat companies. And the administrative state, as it begins to grow after the Civil War, after the federal government gives up on Reconstruction, okay? And we get these little hiccups of social justice, things like everybody hails Teddy Roosevelt as some great reformer. It was tepid, and the reforms of FDR were tepid by comparison to what some people wanted. But it was thrown out there, and even FDR acknowledged it, Brother Albert. He said, he said to the rich, I am saving your asses.
Mm-hmm.
Because he understood what the tenor of the country was.
Mm-hmm.
And so modest reforms were made that the rich then and the rich now, the 1% then and the 1% now, despise.
Yeah.
Because they want it. Oh, look, there's our first mention of it tonight. All. They want it all. And they don't care if it's soaked in a 16-year-old's blood or if the wedding veil of a bride is merged with her flesh. They don't care as long as it helps them get it all. You'll notice that the right wing does not complain about the drone strikes, unless of course the drones might be flying over freaking Monsanto, whom I despise. You know, I mean, and you and I talk about these things from time to time, and I just have to bring this up. I know it's a complete diversion from topic, but I kind of got to anyway. Got a Monsanto story out there that I've been hanging on to for a week, and I may as well ruin people's dinner tonight, as you know, because I won't have many opportunities to ruin dinner for the rest of the week. Sorry, Scott. I don't know if you saw this, but thanks, Monsanto. By virtue of their GMO crops and their Roundup Ready crap, right? The pesticide BT.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, BT has caused cornworms. You ever shuck? I know you shuck corn.
Yep.
Cornworms are really gross. It will put you off. I mean, there's that old gag about what's worse than finding an apple in your a worm in your apple. You know, finding half a worm.
Yeah, cornworms. The other way.
Yeah, I go to shucking corn and I see one of them little worms. And I don't want corn anymore. They're just gross.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks to Monsanto and thanks to BT. Well, there has arisen by virtue of, you know, evolution, super worms.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, and they don't have capes, and they don't have X-ray vision. You just can't kill them. In other words, it's a recipe for famine. Let's see. The EPA, in an interview with Bloomberg, said, there is mounting evidence raising concerns that insect resistance is developing in parts of the corn belt.
Yeah, of course. The plants already are resistant to it. Why wouldn't the insects? You know, nature's not going to... We're not going to beat nature that easy. You know, I mean, maybe, you know, later, you know, we can mortally wound nature and cause the Earth's temperatures to rise to, you know, 10 degrees above, you know, Celsius. That might do some bad things, but there'll still be the microorganisms. Nature will have its last laugh on us if we continue to use these monocrop, nonsensical, stupid, genetically modified frankenfoods. The chemicals don't work. I mean, you know what? I guarantee you nematode worms can still eat it. Guaranteed. Guaranteed nematode worms will still kill those superbugs. I guarantee it. It's just
and here's it. You know, here's the fun part. Monsanto, your friends at Monsanto, have come out with a new sweet corn variety, you know, like you might plant in your garden. And it's got BT pesticide built into it.
Yeah.
Yum, yum. And because it's a real...
You know what's even more dangerous? You know what's more dangerous about that?
What?
This was really dangerous about it. BT is... Like, Monsanto didn't put BT in there. Monsanto just turned the genes on to make BT because plants naturally make BT or ET, whatever we're talking about. It naturally makes that anyway. And it's like, you know, how they communicate with each other, you know, like once the beetle borer, the bark borers come in, they'll come into the forest, and that plant says, uh-oh, I'm getting eaten by it, and it releases a pheromone, which tells all the other trees to start turning on your BT production. So by the time that tree's dead and these beetles move on to the next tree, they might have enough BT to ward it off. But you see, that's the same stupid thing with Monsanto, and they just, it's like antibiotics. It's the same thing. It's MRSA. It's flesh-eating bacteria. It's, you know, weeds that you can't kill, no matter what, you know, not even with fire. And, I mean, they're just creating these things. It's their freaking, what was that, the barbershop thing, whatever, the plant, Little Shop of Horrors. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, feed me, Seymour.
Yeah, and that's, it's just... It's stupid in every way, shape, and form, you know? And it's just people...
Well, here's the really fun part. You know, before when Monsanto has made things like Roundup Ready corn, that there's no way you can cook it, boil it, bean it, bake it, burn it, braise it, whatever. You can't make it edible by... You've got to process it first.
It's a chemical feedstock.
Well, this new BT corn is going to be marketed as fresh produce. So here's the fun part. Walmart's going to start stocking it here in coming months, and they're not going to label it. So you won't. If you buy fresh corn at Walmart, you may be eating Frankencorn from Monsanto.
So the solution is to not buy it.
Right. So, you know, what are you doing in Walmart anyway?
Well, I buy rubbing alcohol and charcoal, but...
Yeah. But as a result, just so people will know, you know, the watershed moment for all of this is going to be, what's it called, Proposition 37 in California on the November ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Monsanto has spent $4.2 million trying to get people to vote for the right to eat unlabeled poison food.
That's it. That's it.
Oh, I'm sure they'll spend more between now and then.
Yeah.
But 91% of the American people want genetically modified organism labeling on their food, but Monsanto doesn't want it for us, and Monsanto knows best. Baron, and what I find terrifying out of this, and just wake up and smell the coffee, California, is if California manages to pass Proposition 37,
mm-hmm.
guess what's going to happen?
Yep.
Monsanto
mm-hmm.
and the rest of those food thugs
mm-hmm.
will then... challenge it in court. They will take it to the Supreme Court, at which point in time the Supreme Court, the rats, of course, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, with Kennedy in tow, the rats will declare that while health care cannot be deemed to be interstate commerce, that California's insistence on GMO labeling is a violation of the Interstate Commerce Clause and will be declared. Write this date down. Bob said it. I've got the robe out. Damn it! I gotta put some of those stars. I gotta get some like super glue or something. Answer hazy. Ask again later. Not this time. On September the 10th, 2012, Bob said that if Proposition 37 passes, it will be challenged in the court, in the Supreme Court. The rats will declare that it is an unfair restraint, an improper, unconstitutional violation of the Commerce Clause, of the Constitution, of the United States, and must be struck down. And once again, we will have shoehorned a little bit more of empire into the framework of the Constitution.
Maybe.
Really? I mean, really? Albert?
Well, hang on. We have Michelle Obama in the White House, not Laura Bush. You didn't hear a peep out of Laura Bush when George Bush said, we're going to have a GMO-only food, you know, feast, and blah, 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 right? GMO's this, perfectly safe. I serve it in the White House. We have Michelle Obama. Michelle Obama says, I'm making an organic garden. that's just a different direction. I mean, I understand big business. I mean, you know, nobody's going to want this. This is, it's just not going to, it's not going to stand.
And the problem, of course, is that Prop 37 is just California. So if you live in Alabama, Stan, and let's say it's a football weekend, and maybe it's a few months from now, and the Tides play in LSU, and it's a big game, and you're gonna get you a pork shoulder and put it on the smoker, or maybe you're gonna do some steaks or something. You wrap it, and we need some roasting ears is what we need. That's what we call them, roasting ears. And you wrap it up in the foil with a little dab of butter in there maybe, and you put it on the grill, and it's so yummy. And, well, you know, we're here buying our pork shoulder at the Wally World. Might as well get some corn here. The farmer's market done shut down for the year. But, well, here's some fine-looking corn. My goodness gracious, ain't it sweet? And you're going to be eating Monsanto famine corn.
Yep.
Yum-y.
Well, and that's what I was saying. The scary thing is because of this, you know, if they make all these insects resistant when they go into the wild, they'll already be resistant to whatever the trees can produce. It's suicidal. It's completely suicidal, and everyone knows that. I mean, just about anybody you talk to knows. They just know that that's not the future. There's no reason for it. That's the other thing. They have to create this market, these fools. I mean, if anyone takes any look at what industrialization of farming has done regarding pesticides and herbicides, it's only made the problem worse. It just is, you know. And then now we have, I mean, you know, and I know I'm a hippie radical here, but, you know, we do have natural solutions, you know. You may not like earwigs because they're creepy looking, but don't kill them. They're like ladybugs. They eat aphids, and they actually eat more than a ladybug does. So they'd eat those worms, and they do that kind of stuff. So, you know, systemic pesticides and having lawns and, you know, rip your lawn up and put a garden in there. Make some flowers in the front so it's not offensive. Maybe some, you know, edible type things that are pretty to look at. And, you know, and there's no reason for a lawn. We put 15% we put on the lawn. It's just, you know, it's not.
Well, did you see where the Miracle-Gro people just pled guilty in court and paid a massive fine?
Until they appeal it.
No, they pled guilty. They pay a massive fine. It's over.
Good.
And you know why? Because the bird seed that they were selling, who knew that there was Miracle-Gro bird seed? Yeah, the bird seed they were selling was tainted with a bunch of pesticides that was really effective at killing birds.
But we can't have windmills because they kill birds.
Yeah, I know. And bats. Indiana bats.
Oh, my God. I know, Brother Bob. You know, I think the tide's changing. I don't think people want this kind of stuff happening. I don't think anybody you explain monoculture, you know, you just look at all the documentaries we have now, right? Food Incorporated, you know, What's on Your Fork? I mean, it just, you know, it's just on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And people are catching on to it. You know, I mean, that little local store that thing is just packed with people. And, you know, it's money's tight and everything else like that. But, you know, we'll go without before we'll go and support these type of industrial farming practices. It's just, and I understand that, you know, a lot of the country's in a food desert. You know, you have no choice, and that sucks. It really does. Rip your friggin' lawn up. You know, get minimal things that you can, you know, maybe, I don't know, form your own cooperative. You know, get the healthy food into your neighborhood, into your community, because once you try it, once you taste it, you know.
Difference in the world.
Yeah, you know, I ain't gonna listen to some stupid liar at Stanford who used to be on Monsanto's board or what have you, writing some bullcrap report which is already getting annihilated about how there's no difference between conventional and organic produce. There is a huge difference. It tastes different.
It tastes better. If you have chickens, and you raise some of the chickens on one side of a hill, and they lay their eggs in the coop on that side of the hill, and the other chickens are eating the same thing on the different side of the hill and go into their coop, the yolk color is different and the flavor is different, and the only variable is the side of the hill. Now, if that's the case, and it is, I mean, there are ancient, not ancient, but old European baking recipes, for instance, that say that to make a certain kind of cake, you want two spring eggs. Not fall eggs, not summer eggs, not winter eggs. You can only make the cake in the spring because you must have spring eggs. Because it makes a damn difference in the cake.
It does.
So, no, that's all very, very, very much a matter of reality, and I hope we haven't ruined anybody's dinner, but you know, these conversations are magnificent. Brother Albert, I wish you a wonderful evening, my friend, and I know you've got a lot of stuff on your plate, but sure would be great if you could find your way down to Madtown, but like I said, I know you're awful busy.
Yeah, oh, she's growing so big. Oh, we got so much. Yeah, we are pretty busy.
Got a name picked out yet?
Yeah, we'll see. What?
Got a name picked out yet?
Yeah, Leto Joseph.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's going to be a little my little guy starting it out. We'll get there one day. 25,000 years, Brother Bob.
That's all it takes. Somebody's got to start somewhere.
We'll get these Harkonnen bastards one way or the other.
We will. Brother Albert, have a good evening.
You too.
Take care. Bye now. Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, calling in. Andy writing in, he says, I so wish Albert was right. Really, I wish to believe our society, our country, were getting better for the common good. Unfortunately, I see little in my world to verify his optimism. I see us moving further and further to plutocratic rule. As you say, the top 1% stay well entrenched in their places, and we fall further down the rungs of poverty. Unfortunately, there's going to have to be some real shock for the top 1% to redistribute their wealth downstream to the proletariat and give the 99% some semblance of political power. Well, Andy, they ain't never going to give us nothing. Ever. And I'm not the genius who's saying that. Power has never been ceded by polite requests. By the way, Andy continues, and see, this is the side he says he sees no hope, but and Andy can't help it. It's not a matter of hope, it's a matter of change. By the way, Andy says, I accompanied some Proposition 37 people to our local Walmart this weekend to deliver a letter to the manager at Walmart to please label that new GMO pesticide DNA-laced sweet corn with a label. The Walmart manager was very nice, listened to us, and said he'd see what he could do. It actually went fairly well with the top store manager, so we're on top of it. I've heard Monsanto is putting in over $20 million with ADM, ConAgra, among others, throwing in a few million each, bringing the current tally to between $35 million to $40 million in anti-Proposition 37 advertising, ready to be rolled out. Dear God. And if they'll spend that to stop the proposition, what will they spend? What they would have to spend in the Supreme Court challenge is chump change. But see, Andy, you're taking steps. You're active. You're participating. And when you participate, you make it more likely that others will participate and will be active. And so maybe Albert is right. It's that whole bumper sticker thing. You know, we on our side don't have a hell of a lot of great bumper stickers. But we've got a couple. One of them simply says coexist. And the other one says, think globally, act locally. Now, where the difference comes is, you know, could we find 15 or 20 people that would deliver a similar petition to the Wally World in Op, Alabama. Is there a Wally World in Op? I don't know. Wally World in Florence, Alabama would be fine, or the one in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, or the ones all over Birmingham, or maybe in Mobile. See, I think about Mobile. My God, there is beautiful farmland over in Baldwin County, and the sweet corn they grow there, you can eat it raw. It's like candy. And it's a matter of becoming that force multiplier, so that something you do in California becomes something that people can do down in the oppressed Confederacy, down in Jesus Land. know. Maybe I could get a few people together here, and we could deliver a petition to the Wally World here. Because you see, when petitions for things like labeling start showing up in places like West Virginia Stan and Alabama Stan, then you know it's catching on. So what we've got to do is, like I said, be a force multiplier. The petition language needs to be up on a website somewhere with an invitation for anybody to come and use it and make it their own and take it somewhere else where it is the last place in the world anyone would expect to see it. Because the most surefire way of making sure that that optimistic future, that hopeful future that Albert talks about never happens, is to not do anything to make it happen. I'm going back to the phones. Stick around. You know the number, 877-443-2366. 877, the number 4, head on. 304-658-3333 gets you in just as easily and saves us the cost of the toll-free coverage. We lost. We didn't lose. He died. A real hero in the struggle for Appalachian human rights died this weekend. The news came out yesterday. It was shocking. It was sad. Larry Gibson is gone. Larry Gibson is dead. Larry Gibson is the one who introduced, to the extent that people have seen mountaintop removal up close and personal, they may very well have seen it for the first time in person via Larry Gibson. He saved about 50 acres of a little area of what was then known as Cayford Mountain and would not sell out to the coal companies. And he built cabins and a little pavilion and a little picnic space up there on Cayford. It's hard to get to, rocky road. Larry was tormented by the coal industry to no end for having the unmitigated gall to stand up to money. But when you walked the path and you came out at what Larry called Hell's Gate and looked out on the vast acreage, the vast expanse of death that is a mountaintop removal site, if you happened to be there when a blast went off, your life changed forever. And Larry changed thousands of lives. It would have been so easy to say the hell with this and take the coal company's money and go somewhere else. Live a happy little life in the burbs. Get a hobby. But he couldn't do it. Because in what had been a very hard life, the mountains of his home had ever proved his only solace. And he knew that other people were losing their homes too, and that the mountains that had shadowed and protected them were being blasted to oblivion forever. And so Larry Gibson stood his ground. And said no. And so yesterday, at the age of 66, Larry Gibson left the fight. He did not leave voluntarily. He did not leave of his own free will. The great big heart that lived in his little body just gave out. And so it falls to those thousands to whom he introduced the horrors of mountaintop removal to carry on in his absence. We will miss Larry Gibson. Everyone who ever knew him will miss him. On Thursday, there will be an event in Washington, D.C., to speak up and speak out about mountaintop removal. I'll be there. It's part of why I'm going to be gone this week. And there will not be a soul there who will not be carrying Larry Gibson in their heart and in their memory. Larry did the only thing his morals would allow him to do. He stood up and spoke out, and even though he many times felt he was all alone, resisted the power of billionaires and did not let them destroy him. I've told you before about the statistic that says there are around 4,000 excess deaths in mountaintop removal communities in West Virginia every year. Those excess deaths are deaths that would not otherwise occur, even after you factor in dietary choices, smoking, drinking, bad life decisions. They wouldn't happen except for the fact that these people live in the shadow of mountaintop removal. We say 4,000 and we try to envision 4,000 people. But sometimes it is necessary to envision only one. Only one. And yesterday, we were reminded of what that one can be. But he never ran away, and he never quit. So just a moment of memory for a hero in the struggle for hillbilly human rights. A moment of recollection for Larry Gibson. And a reminder, I tweeted I created a petition yesterday at signon.org, and I tweeted it and Facebooked it, and it has 192 signatures. If you go to signon.org and look for End Appalachia's Agony, you'll find it. If you haven't signed it yet, please do. We have signatures from North Carolina, New York, Kentucky, California, Virginia, Ohio, Massachusetts, Arizona, My God. What a beautiful tribute it would be if by Thursday we had a few thousand signatures and we could take it and deliver it to the White House with a picture of Larry on top of it. If you ever met Larry, you know that when you walked up, he would often look at you and say, "Where you been?" Not as in, "Hey, where you been?" It was in the way of asking, "What have you done today to end this misery? Where you been? Why haven't you joined the fight before now?" But then he'd say, "Awful glad to have you." So you can go to ACAC.org and learn all you need to know about the one bill that has the greatest chance of bringing about Larry Gibson's dream of ending mountaintop removal. And then you can go to signon.org and look for End Appalachia's Agony and sign the petition if you haven't already. And if we can get a few thousand signatures, we will. I'll see to it. We'll deliver it. Come Thursday. All right? So here we are, two-thirds of the way through this Monday evening program on the Horn. It's about 4 minutes before the hour. We'll take a little break and come back, hopefully, to your calls to 877-443-2366 or 304-658-3333. This is conversation radio that you create. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I am a West Virginia mountain and I'm nervous. I'm wondering if I'm gonna lose my top. They've been blasting me down wedge by wedge to take my soul of course. I'm begging you to make this nonsense stop. I have a friend who fights for me. He's trying to stand his ground. But that ground is being scooped away around him anyhow. They've no respect for sacred land where Larry's family rests. They burned his home and shot his truck to make him leave his nest. I am a West Virginia mountain and I'm nervous. I'm wondering if I'm gonna lose my top. They've been lasting me down wedge by wedge to take my soul of course. I'm begging you to make this nonsense stop. The earth they scoop away is tossed into the land below, filling valleys and causing floods where waters never rose. Where there once were forests, there are grasslands without streams. Appalachian wildlife can't adapt to these extremes. I am a West Virginia mountain and I'm nervous. I'm wondering if I'm gonna lose my ear top. They've been blasting me down wedge by wedge to take my soul of hope. I'm begging you to make this nonsense. My furry and my feathered friends and Larry need your help. You can make a difference
in a land of greed and wealth. Mountaintop removal cannot be part of my plan, nor can peak reduction help me make them understand. I am a West Virginia mountain and I'm nervous. I'm wondering if I'm gonna lose my top. They've been blasting me down wedge by wedge to take my soul apart. I'm begging you to make this nonsense stop. Save the mountain. Save the mountains right now. Save the mountains. Save the mountains. Save the mountains somehow. I am a West Virginia mountain and I'm nervous.
And people don't understand the connection between the land and the people. Our mothers give us birth, of course, but the land gave us life.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future.
The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yes, indeed. 2 minutes past the hour on this Monday, the 10th of September, 2012. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. And we will proceed onward momentarily. That was what you heard there a moment ago. That was the voice of Larry Gibson. And the song you heard before that was Larry's Mountain, coming from the album Moving Mountains, Voices of Appalachia. Happy news. We have met Dr. John's challenge. So that means he will be matching what came in with his own $50 contribution. And what that means is that we'll be here for another day. The other side of that coin, however, is that we won't be here Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, which means I won't be sitting here saying, please contribute. Which means, in turn, that very few likely will. So the more we do this evening and tomorrow, the more likely it is we can keep ahead of the curve and make sure that there's an October for the Horn now that we're in September. Let's go to the phones and see what's happening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. This is Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Good, doing good. I actually got my computer to finally get on change.org and sign their petitions. There was some kind of glitch in it, and I went finally and think I solved the problem. So I'm signing the petition as we speak. So
wonderful.
I'd encourage everyone to do that.
And yes, there and that that's at change.org. We have another one now at signon.org.
Well, I have to look that one up. But
yeah, signon.org is an element of moveon.org.
Right.
And I'm proud to say that just between yesterday and today, we have managed to get, here, let me refresh just so that I can see. Yeah, we're just since I mentioned it, we've gone from 192 signatures to 200. I mean, to
wow.
I'm sorry, to 197. The current goal is 200 signatures, so yeah, signon.org and just look for, well, search for End Appalachia's Agony.
Yeah.
It's the website is actually signon.org/sign/end-appalachias-agony. So that's pretty easy.
Yep. Well, what I just did with this computer a while ago might allow me to go to that sign-on site where lately I've been having lots of problems getting onto the sign-on site. It's been ridiculous. And I go to that site quite a bit. So I'll go back up to that site and search that petition as well. So hopefully I'll be maybe your 200th signature on that one. Who knows?
But that would be awesome. And see, when this thing rises to a level that the sign-on folks realize that a lot of people are paying attention to it, they'll pay attention to it too, and hopefully help us spread it around.
Well, see, that's the other thing I can do is once I get to that petition on sign-on, I can, email it to the people here in Colorado Springs, and that's one of the things I told Lamborn's office when I called them is you wouldn't allow that mountaintop removal here in the Rocky Mountain region, and so the people here in the Rocky Mountain region do have a vested interest in stopping mountaintop removal because it could be coming to a location near you if it isn't stopped soon. So.
Yeah, I just checked the main page for signon.org. Apparently, we haven't generated enough heat yet to make their main page. So far, their main page petitions are have fact checkers at the presidential and vice presidential debates, tell New York Archbishop don't allow Romney endorsements in church bulletins, protect women's health centers in Virginia, Governor Brewer stop attacking young immigrants, statewide just say no to Pennsylvania voter ID law, stop Tennessee from executing Abu Ali, and Chris Kobach needs to apologize. Once we get a significant number of petition signatures, let's see, they've got the Chris Kobach one has 1,841. Fact checkers at the presidential vice presidential debates has 159,000. So yeah, we've got to generate some heat around this petition, Kevin.
Well, now, I've used sign-on quite a bit, Bob, so that petition might be on the front page there because I've signed some petitions with them that had relatively few signatures, but yet we're on that front page. So I think they sometimes do alternate what's on that front page.
Oh, okay.
So I wanted to call and report to you, though, that, hey, I haven't heard from the people with the Sierra Club yet at all.
You may not.
I may not, but I thought I'd put it out there over the airwaves in case somebody from the Sierra Club is listening and maybe would like to respond to my many emails that I wrote to people on the East Coast, West Coast, and everywhere in between, hoping to get a response from someone. But so far, I have none.
Oh, by the way, just got a little note in from Isaac. He said, tell Kevin, all GoDaddy sites are down today. They got hacked.
Well, doesn't affect me. With me and my screen reader, that's why I'm so excited, because with change.org petitions, I haven't been able to do those in quite a while. And that just got fixed today, I hope. So, like I said, as we speak, I'm currently on the ACAC petition, getting ready to hit the sign button as soon as I'm off the call with you. So, I did want to mention that if you read that petition about Governor Romney, on there. What was the name of that again? On the sign-on page, do you have it up?
Let's see.
There's the fact checkers, and then the next one after that.
Let me have a quick look. I can't type. Tell New York Archbishop don't allow Romney endorsements in church bulletins.
If those of you listening feel like it, go to that and read that petition. It is absolutely unbelievable to me that they are putting this in their church bulletins to vote for Romney. I know it's gotten to that point.
Well, they need to lose. I mean, it's fairly obvious to me that they need to lose their 501c3 designation because they're politicking from the pulpit.
Yes, exactly. And who would that be? The tax people that would do that, or would that be something?
Yeah, no, that's the IRS.
Yeah, the IRS. That's what I was looking for. That word. That's something the IRS should be looking into, right? Not the Attorney General, but IRS.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, why aren't they looking into it?
We don't necessarily know that they aren't, but I can tell you in an election year, why not? Kevin, don't we already have enough complaints out there by these big fundamentalist babies that, Obama's persecuting the Christians. Yeah, he's sticking poles up our butts and dipping us in pitch and lighting up the White House gardens just like Nero.
Yep, I know. But still, with something as blatant as this, I just can't believe that it's being let pass. And maybe if enough people sign that petition, it'll get some notice, because it's something that I just can't fathom. I put on that webpage, are you really following the gospel by telling people to vote for Romney? Didn't the gospel tell you to pray for your leaders? How many of you have prayed for President Obama? You know, and that's where we're at in America. That's where we are with American churches. And, of course, there's always been hypocritical things about the church. But I've never, you know, it's 2012, and I definitely in 2012 did not expect us to be where we are today, where up is down and down is up. I was thinking as you were talking earlier about animal, have you ever seen the, I read the book, and then somewhere in high school, I saw a film called Animal Farm, which was based on the book.
Right, George Orwell.
Right. Have you ever seen you've read the book, I'm sure. Have you read the book?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, all the way back. Yeah, the first time was in high school. That was back when high school students were allowed to read subversive literature.
Yeah, well, I don't know what's subversive about it. I think it's a great lesson in what happens. And I was thinking when you were talking earlier about that, because I think that's where we're at now. It's time for the animals in this farm to uproot the so-called masters and kick them out. The only thing that needs to be done is to make sure that once we become the rulers, that we do not do what these people have done. And that is the challenge. If ever progressives do get a hold on this country, we need to make sure that we do not become what we fought against. And it is easier said than done to do that. So, I kind of lost my train of thought because there was something you and, what was your caller's name?
Albert, Brother Albert.
Something you and Albert were mentioning there that I wanted to mention too, but I've totally lost my train of thought. I just really wanted to call you about the Sierra Club and the lack of response, and hopefully someday soon I might hear from them. So that's about all I got, I guess.
Well, I sure appreciate it all, Kevin. Thank you very kindly.
Getting ready to hit the send button, and everybody go to change.org and signon.org.
Well, to get to the change.org petition, it's just easiest to go to acheact.org. There's a link there. We haven't linked the sign-on petition there because I just started that yesterday. But yep. signon.org /sign/end-appalachias-agony, which is pretty easy in the long run.
When you typed in, when you did that with Appalachias, did you do an apostrophe, or is that just one?
No. The apostrophes can't go into URLs, right. So it just says Appalachias.
Okay.
All right. Kevin, have a wonderful evening.
You too, Bob.
All right.
Have a good trip.
Thanks. Gonna try. Bye now.
Bye.
That's our good friend Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. And I want to make something clear. When I talk about this trip that I'm about to take, this does not include and this does not use Horn operational funds. I just want you to know that. The trip to Wisconsin is being paid for privately and independently, and I'm very grateful for that. And I will get there. Also, I will get to D.C. Without Horn funds. So when you contribute, that's not what you're contributing to. Texas Betsy is one of the people that is listed in the credits every evening. She's been involved with this effort for a very, very long time down in Texas, obviously, hence the name. She said, after 14 months of scratching out a living from 3 part-time jobs and a ton of tutoring, I now have a full-time job with a real paycheck. I also still have some tutoring money coming in, and I am no longer feeding a teenage vacuum cleaner. Crossed out. Son. He's off to college. We're all proud of him, too. All of which means that I have more money to start contributing regularly to the Horn. My first paycheck arrives 9/27, and I'll be adding the Horn to the list of payments I send out the first week of every month. The Horn is such an important voice for liberals and for the AIC Act and the movement to end mountaintop removal, and we can't afford to let it fail. In fact, says Betsy, we really can't afford for you to get sick from the stress of never knowing if you can pay the monthly bills. Please ask listeners who have never contributed to please consider it. We are the only network out there doing what we do, and the only one with no commercials and no slavery to the clock of hard breaks. Those of us who contribute regularly can't do it alone. We're all in this together, and that's as true financially as it is in regards to our ability to eat safe food and drink safe water and breathe clean air. Horn family members don't pollute each other's drinking water, and we need to take the same amount of care in ensuring that the network continues to exist beyond the first day of the next month. I haven't heard it said better in quite some time, Betsy. Thank you. And I'll bet you at some point in time, the Secretary of Fundraising, otherwise known as Kate on the Front Range, will be sending in a note saying, Yahoo! Yay for Betsy! Thank you. Thank you for those kind words. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, so I'm trying to figure out how, Rahm Emanuel isn't any different from Scott Walker. I need someone to tell me.
You mean vis-a-vis the strike in Chicago?
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't see any difference, and I don't see much vocal support coming forth from the so-called Democratic Party.
I wouldn't. Well, I imagine they don't want to cross Rahm.
Well, I mean, because... I just am, looking at that. Then I think about, his situation. He sends his kids to a school that, brace yourself, costs between $20,000 and $26,000 per student per year. That would be the Chicago Laboratory Schools, the same schools, by the way, that Obama's two daughters went to when he was in Chicago. 23, 26, 20,000, depending on what year you're in.
Jeez.
So that's where he's sending his school, his kids. But he is going to say no to public school teachers because they want air conditioning in a classroom that's 95 fucking degrees. When I was at undergraduate and the class was above 80, we was like, hey, shit, we got to get up out of here. You better try to conduct this shit outside. But, you know, kids don't have that option.
No, no, they don't.
And most of my classes at university were air-conditioned, but we had a couple of old buildings where they always threw government majors, if I may digress. We always had to sit there sweating it. I'm like, what the fuck? But anyway.
Well, see, I mean, if you'd been doing something productive, you would have had a nice air-conditioned classroom, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that was the whole point of that. But what I'm saying is that we're not asking, you know, they're not asking much. They're asking for air-conditioning rooms. You know, come on. I'm just sort of, they don't want 1,000 kids in the classroom.
Well, and
they don't want to work, they don't want to work extra and not get paid. Yeah, this is all the things that, you know, seems reasonable.
But I tell you what, so much of that, Sandra, is being lost in the, I mean, I already saw one photograph today, and I mean, they're working it hard, of a sign being held up that said, Save Our Teachers, A-R-E. You know, you never know when something's been photoshopped. And the, you know, the, you're right. The hardcore messaging is already out there. And I'm behind, I'm behind the teachers.
Well, no, but the thing is, you have to.
Because you know what? If the teachers are in a classroom that's 95 degrees, so are the kids.
Well, yeah, exactly. And the other thing about the Chicago situation that is worth noting is that, unlike the New York teachers union, the Chicago one has a long history of working quite closely with the community, a lot of community input. So, and I think that will carry over in this action, too. I mean, the Chicago union is storied. I mean, this is a major deal. It's the third largest school district in the country. You basically have some asshole who wants to divert all the public, a lot of the public money to create 250 privatized
schools. Charter schools.
Well, whatever you want. I call them they're privatized school because they're not.
Well, I don't even know what that term means, charter schools.
No, it means they're not, you know, it's just they're ununion, they're not unionized. I don't know who they're accountable to.
Oh, scab schools. Oh, okay. In other words, scab schools.
Right. And they want, and he wants to divert public monies to that. This is also, and if you want to see what Chicago will look like if they lose, you can go to Detroit. Detroit has been annihilated to the point where, they have to fulfill contracts that call for up to 60 students a class.
Jesus. I guess this is a rhetorical question, Sandra, but still, how does anybody learn in a classroom with 60 people in it?
Well, they don't, and they're subjected to high-stake testing, which I'll add to you, at the Chicago Laboratory Schools, they only have low-stake testing, which just gives you an evaluation of your little,
yeah, where are we? Where are we going?
Yeah,
where have we been?
Kind of stuff.
We're not gonna hang a kid's future on it or the funding of a school system.
It actually says low stake. You know what I mean? I mean, I was reading all about that school after my eyes went back into my head after reading those tuition prices. You know, you send some 8-year-old to a school that costs as much as a UC campus? I'm like, good Lord. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And for him to stand up there talking about the children, it's like, no, you know what? People need to wise up. These rich assholes who are like in roles of leadership, and they're going to dictate to the public, you know, what the commons are going to become. And meanwhile, you make sure you got your kid in a nice progressive school that deals with how they're feeling each day.
Yeah,
which is all good. I mean, all schools.
Well, no, I mean, I have a lot of sympathy and concern for the public schools because going back to No Child's Behind left, it was pretty obvious that was the beginning of an attempt to completely undermine the very idea of public education in the United States. You remember when Rick Perry couldn't remember the names of all the administrative agencies he was going to shut down back in one of those Republican pageants, Sandra?
Yeah.
Well, one of them is always, and has been for probably 30 or 40 years now, the Republican, we're going to eliminate the Department of Education because the federal government ain't got no business in how we educate little American children. That's a state's rights issue, which means we want to go back to, you know, those kind of schools. And if frankly, I don't know why education is not taken over at a federal level so that, it is a fact that, for instance, if you go to a public school in, say, Massachusetts, you are probably going to get a better education as a child than if you go to a public school in Mississippi. Because,
yeah,
you know, down Mississippi, they've got the school-to-prison pipeline we were talking about.
Oh, yeah, and now you think about, you know, how disgusting. You have people like Rahm Emanuel and Arnie Duncan and Barack Obama all, you know, turning over the education of kids in Mississippi to the tender mercies of quacks, charlatans, and whack jobs.
Not to mention in Louisiana as well.
Right. Those kids are being, they're turning public education into, as Chris Hedges calls, sacrifice zones, too.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I like I said, I have a tremendous degree of sympathy with all of this. Let's see, we're homeschooling Ferg. Margie has mercifully graduated, and we're trying to figure out some way to get her into a college somewhere. And my youngest, we moved her completely out of this school system because in this county, the state declared us a failure and moved in with the hatchet people to start chopping this school, you know, start slowly killing this school system. So, you know, my youngest is living with our eldest daughter and going to school in a different county, just in the desperate hope that she can get some sort of an education.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what really is at risk here is, people's ability to, you know, I can't wrap my head around it. It's like the whole basis of a functioning democracy is to have, you know, a reasonably informed and educated, you know, populace. Otherwise, you know, it won't work. And I guess by design, because if you have a poor child learning history from a fucking Bob Jones University history book, you know, God help us, right?
Yeah, and, you know, Ray asks what I think is an important question here, Sandra. He says, if you were the 1%, would you want the 99% educated? And, you know, my answer to that hypothetical question is, well, if I'm me and you're you and we are as enlightened as the rest of the Horn family is and we're 1%, yes, we want an educated 99% because an educated 99% is less likely to come and chop off our heads.
Well, there is that, but see, they're not, the way they're looking at it, I mean, you know, you still want to have a reasonable amount of education because you needed people to do your work, to work competently, but since the whole globe is now available for labor, I just think that, you know, a good third of the population in this country can just fall by the wayside. Who gives a F? You certainly don't.
Well,
care.
A third of this country right now, a third of the high school students in this country right now do that. I remember several years ago when we had a former governor of the state of West Virginia on this program who had moved on to this education think tank, and he was talking about the fact that one third of high school students in this country drop out every year. Now what becomes of them, Sandra?
Well, I mean, it's just this sort of increasing, I don't know, I don't even want to use underclass. I mean, you know, the language has to be sort of explored because the shit is so out of control.
Aren't we talking about the deliberate creation of a surf class?
Well, yeah, it's all surf.
But there's no land, you know, even with medieval feudalism. The whole point of having serfs was that you tied them to a craft or you tied them to the land deliberately, and you said, well, you know, if you're born the son of a peasant farmer you shall be, and it will be a little that you shall go and do anything else. And the same thing with barrel stave makers, you know, coopers or barrel hoop makers or glass blowers or seamstresses and tailors, but we don't even have that for them. So, I mean, and I mean, no disrespect to anybody working in these particular industries. But what is this? Is this a permanent, permanent sort of class that will forever work at 7-Eleven and McDonald's?
Well, yeah, I mean, and if you have a huge, you know, people who are just in a precarious situation all the time and insecure, you know, the wages will never change. You know, I mean,
Milton Friedman would be so proud.
Well, no, the latest example of, you know, the whole idea of neoliberalism turning to neo-feudalism is the creditors are now demanding that all industries in Greece switch to a six-day work week.
Yep, yep. I think I actually managed to mention that on one of the programs last week, and that's horrifying.
I'm just like, wow, you know. So, I mean, that is...
And it's a six-day, it's 6 days, 10 hours a day, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if, yeah, I'm sure, yeah. And this is what they want these people to do. And remember, the Greek people who were there, they're now demanding this situation, they didn't cause this. This is the thing that's, and to me, I don't know why, I don't know how much more they can take. I mean, I won't be surprised if they're not sort of getting out of the Eurozone, because I'm not too sure if the government is going to be able to stay in power with this.
Well, what does it mean to work 60 hours a week if you're not getting paid worth a damn?
Well, no, but it's just, that's what I'm saying. I just don't, you know, I think these creditors, these people in Brussels, they tripping. That's all. They have really lost their mind. And, you know, I love how the American press is having a field day with, you know, poor Hollande, also known as Obama. You know, now he's backing away from his 75%, you know, taxes on the rich because, you know, one of their rich assholes threatening to leave, right? The fourth richest man in the world is some French fashion fuck, and he's saying he's going to go to Belgium, you know, and take all his money with him. But in France, there's headlines saying, you know, get your ass on, you rich creep or something, you know.
Goodbye now.
But Hollande is sort of, you know, has already mentioned that it may only be for 2 years now and, you know, hedging and wavering a bit. So we'll see how that pans out. But, yeah, I don't know, you know, and so it's a stark war now. It's them.
Well, like with the Greece situation, how many times, Sandra, have we heard the Republicans say, well, you know, the United States might turn into Greece, which is impossible, except for the fact that when we're talking about a six-day work week and a 10-hour-a-day work day, what's for the Republican Party not to like? They want that.
Oh, no. I mean, it's, you know, and because this society is so stratified, you have from slavery to nobody to a person just being idle and everything in between in this country. You know what I'm saying already?
Yeah.
So it's not like those kinds of situations aren't existing right now. I mean...
And, you know, Ray asking a question here, and you're probably better suited to answer this than I am by a long shot, Sandra. Whatever happened to all that money the middle class used to have?
Well, can we go back to the $10 trillion that just been sucked out of this country? I keep going back to that because I'm just in awe of the disappearing money in these various... Cayman Island type situations. I mean, Reagan got rid of Bishop in Grenada in about a minute. Well, I'm about ready for the Marines to be used in another capacity.
Hard to push back on that.
Because you got trillions sucked out of this country over the last 30 years, you know? Untaxed, unproductive capital. Because they lifted controls, you know, which is just a huge tragedy for working folks, these capital, lack of capital controls. I mean, Europe, you're starting to get some, you know, by default in place, in some of these countries, because, people are, you know, taking their money and, you know, putting all their money in German banks, hedging. And the peripheral countries are freaking out. You know, they can't have that happen. Anyway, you know, keep your eye out on Wednesday. The German Supreme, whatever it's called, the Supreme Court of Germany is about to rule on a really important part of these sort of bailout funds they have in Europe. And if the German Supreme Court says you know, 9 on that, it's going to be some huge problems.
This would speak to the Greek crisis and the general credit.
All of it, because
the whole
Germany,
thing.
Yeah, Germany is the sort of funder of these things, you know, via the European Central Bank. So if the European Central Bank, like that Draghi asshole, is saying now we want to backstop all these bonds from Italy and Spain, if they agree to it. Well, this German court can say, well, no, it's unconstitutional for Germany, which means that, you know, they can't participate in that.
And the backstop goes away.
Well, sort of, yeah. It's a big deal. Now, I'm inclined to think that, you know, shit, they probably got guns to their heads, whatever they got to do. So I'll be really surprised if they say no, but that is a possibility.
And
it is Germany, which, you know, we...
Well, the fact of the matter is, Germany, as far as the European Central Bank is concerned, in large part, that's another way of saying Germany, isn't it?
Yeah, but there's also the Netherlands, and they got elections coming up, and, you know, they don't want to fund nothing either. So, you know, you're coming up against, once again, oh, my God, people voting. Damn it, we can't have that. You know, they don't really like it in Europe at the moment. So they keep having these hiccups where people are voting, and they're saying, no, not our money. Can we go away? So, you know, I just think that, you know, there's some interesting dynamics happening to look out for, called elections and called, you know, the court system. So we'll see.
But my God, you know, I started out the program with my Moran Monday nomination of Rand Paul, who didn't understand that that public sector employment had gone down under President Obama.
Didn't Krugman tell him that, and he just said it's not true?
Yeah, he wouldn't acknowledge reality.
Man, I mean, that's some scary shit. I mean, it's funny, but it's just really disturbing, too.
It is, and the reason I brought it up in the course of this conversation, Sandra, is that when the other side simply will not acknowledge reality, then what are you left with? Of course they're saying, you know, we need a little more austerity here. I mean, this is September the 10th, okay? Today in Charleston, West Virginia, unless it didn't come off, the Cat Food Commission came to, in Joe Manchin's words, explain the hard facts to West Virginia. Now, why would West Virginia need to know the hard facts except for the fact that a huge number of West Virginia's population, because we have been an industrial labor state, is absolutely broke down and beat up. There's a ton of people here who are on some form of public assistance because they have been economically devastated over the course of their working lives. So, you know, that's why West Virginia has to be told the hard facts. And, you know, people like Joe Manchin are still hustling it.
If I thought that, you know, once after the election, you know, we could, you know, count on something reasonable from the Democrats, all I hear is, you know, more austerity, which is absurd in this climate. They shouldn't be cutting anything, you know what I mean? And the fact that, you know, Obama is, you know, still talking like tackling the deficit is, you know, job one. It's like, oh, no.
Yeah,
Did you hear, how many times did Romney change up on the health care thing this weekend? I mean, that dude is jacked up, okay?
Yeah, and when that got a little too hot, he backed up to God and has now said that Barack Obama is anti-God.
Oh, I know, but I mean, you know, with his cult ass, you know what I mean? He can't talk about God. I mean, the more
I hear about him, I mean, this quote from him today, where he said, let's see, if I become president of the United States, I will not take God out of my heart. I will not take God out of the public square, and I will not take it out of the platform of my party. Okay, fine, Willard, but is it okay if America asks which God that would be? Is that the God who is the daddy of the two brothers, Jesus and Satan, on Kolob? Is that God?
And what is he talking about? Didn't they get a call from Obama directly to put God back in? What is he talking about?
Right. Just make it up. And, I mean, it's making crap up, and it's the same thing, not even dealing with reality. The same thing with Rand Paul.
Oh, no, that just sounded completely freaky that he was determined just to believe his own version of reality. It's the same with that guy who was talking about women having abilities to stop pregnancy if they're raped. I mean, there's an argument to be made that these people only deal with their own reality, so he probably talks to only people who believe that shit, and it just sort of bubbles out once in a while.
And I don't know if you caught the talking point over the weekend, but this thing has gone fast and furious. When I'm hearing it last week coming out of the mouth of a 1,932,768th tier right-wing talker in Beckley, and then I'm hearing it coming out of the mouth of Joe Walsh in Illinois, I know it's coordinated, this idea that Sandra Fluck won't get a job. Have you caught that one, Sandra?
No, I haven't caught that meme.
Oh, my God. Yeah, she wants everybody to pay for her birth control. She's 30 years old. Why won't that woman get a job?
I thought she was a law graduate or a law student.
Well, among other things, she's had a job. And she is a student, and I think maybe she graduated or something. But at any rate, no, this idea of denigrating her as, you know, just another layabout, lazy, you know, no good, liberal, is absolutely sickening. Why won't she get a job? My God.
Well, no, but I still am horrified by that stupid man woman, I don't know who she is, Ann Coulter, talking about, oh, Bill Clinton probably impregnated her in the back of the, you know, convention. I mean, who says shit like that on the left? And if you do, you have to come out and prostrate yourself. And
well, Jesus, you know, poor old, what was his name? Poor old the John Duncan, was that his name? Or John Burton, chairman of the Democratic.
John Burton, yeah.
Yeah. Said that the Republicans were advancing the big lie, you know, like Joseph Goebbels, and the White House practically forced him to abase himself before the Republican Party.
Yeah, well, the White House is good for that madness.
Yeah, I reckon. Gee-many Christmas.
It's always the same. But, yeah, you know, I mean, it'll be interesting to see this whole strike business because, you know, it would just be great for Rahm Emanuel to get put down a bit. He's disgusting.
Well, it's not gonna happen. The Obama administration isn't gonna smack him down.
Well, no, I'm not saying. I mean, you know, for the action to bring him back to the table. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about anything.
But I mean, do you think that? And I don't ask this. Negatively, I ask it somewhat cynically, I suppose. But can the teachers in Chicago actually win that messaging battle? Because they've got to do that before anybody comes back to any table, don't they?
No, I understand. But as I said, the only upside to this is their interaction with the community. You know, there is a basis for community help in this situation. That's all. So,
yeah.
You're gonna get, you know what I'm saying, you may get more parent support here than you would, you know, say in San Francisco or even New York, you know?
God, I hope so.
But we'll see. I mean
what parent wants their kids sweltering in a 95 degree classroom? That's what just flabbergasts me.
Yeah, and also, I mean, you know, they have, you know, it's Arnie Duncan's old stomping ground where he was really into, you know, militarizing all the, at least the poor schools, you know, that whole trip.
Oh, Jesus.
So, you know, it's not, none of it's good. And these people haven't had a strike in 25 years. So, and the thing I noticed about that, you know, you heard about the Alcoa workers in Italy, you know, straight up street battles with pigs. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's a lot of industrial labor strife going on. You know what I'm saying? And it just reminded me of there was a whole bunch of it going on during the last depression. So this whole idea of, oh, you can't strike when shit is bad. No, that's when you do.
Yeah.
If history is any indication.
Because when things go bad, the first people they take it out on are the workers.
Right. I'm just saying. So I just.
I mean, if you didn't, go read this New York Times story about Mr. Islam who got disappeared in Bangladesh.
No. There's some horrible industrial horror stories in that country. Wow. It's a really sad, horrible history of, you know, like that fire. What was the name of that fire in New York that happened 100 years ago?
Oh, the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire?
Yeah, well, they had something similar in Bangladesh a few years ago.
Oh, I remember when the cinder block building of a sewing factory, four or five stories, just collapsed on people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they you know, it's that kind of party there, so I'm not surprised.
And we're talking about people who were working for $21 a day, or $21 a month, I'm sorry, $21 a month, and they got it raised to $37 a month. Hoo-wee! You know, a dollar and a dime a day. Don't spend it all in one place.
Well, that country has more pressing concerns than labor strife. It's going to disappear in the water.
Yeah, it is going underwater. And remember, you know, there's that indigenous group that's been on their land for 20,000 years that some bunch of coal thugs want to displace because they happen to they happen to live for 20,000 years on top of what turns out to be a bunch of coal.
Yeah.
So, you know, they got to go too. But right. But when you look at the people who are participating, not people, when you look at the global transnationals that use these Bangladeshi sweatshops, Nike, Tommy Hilfiger, you know, for all we know, probably Ralph Lauren, who knows who else? When you look at that, you know, why can the American people not bring pressure to bear? I mean, granted, pressure was brought to bear on precious Apple when we finally found out that people were jumping to their deaths off of Foxconn roofs in order rather than go on working to make Apple's doohickeys. You know, a little pressure was brought to bear. Now they're probably still slaves. Who are we kidding? But you know, there was the issue that was brought up the other day of, for instance, the Brazilian government saying to Apple, no, you're not going to sell crap in this country if you're not building it here. And so I guess I don't know what Foxconn is building sweatshops in Brazil, but the fact of the matter is, it means something because I mean, you know what a Tommy Hilfiger shirt goes for in Macy's?
How much?
Oh, hell, every bit of $60-$70.
Yeah, no.
And there's not 10 cents in it.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's crazy, though, when you start breaking down the prices of it, when you know that is damn near slave labor to produce it.
No, well, I don't even think damn near. It is slave labor. Because
you know,
if you've got a job in one of those sewing factories, what are you going to do otherwise?
Well, listen, there's this other story that I wonder if you saw it. Oh, my God. I just stumbled upon this. I'm like, wow. So the board in Detroit agreed to a $48 million five-year private contract with some who knows what to cut 81% of the water workforce.
What?
So the board in Detroit has authorized $48 million to be paid to this company to reduce the workforce by 81%. Now, keep in mind that the water is provided for 40% of Michigan. So it's not, you know what I'm saying? And, of course, the majority of the workers are of color.
Right, naturally.
And they want to, you know, reduce a 1,200-plus workforce. You know, 81%.
How are they going to do that and keep delivering water, Sandra?
Well, they've had cuts before, and it was disaster, as far as how the water was coming to customers. So, you know, this is an outrage. It's too much. Banks are involved in this. And the most disturbing thing about this is that the water system in Detroit isn't under stress. There is no problems with the bonds or the financing of it.
Jesus.
They just want it. And the racial component in this is quite disturbing. Yeah, I'll send you the link. I just was sort of, you know, really quite just gobsmacked by this bullshit. And I'll hang up because I got to go. But please tell me you saw Pat Robinson talking about sending people to Saudi Arabia.
I actually was kind of planning on ending the show with that.
Oh, man. I was like,
just sort of a little denouement to Moran Monday.
No. Because that was just, I was listening, I think, are you, what? Anyway, yeah, so you need to share that with the people because that's a good one.
Absolutely gonna. I trust you enjoyed yesterday.
Well, are you talking about the football?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no. It was on. I was like,
I don't think Mark Sanchez is gonna just sort of bow out and walk away and let little Timmy Gebo have it.
Oh, hell no. I mean, like I said, I looked at him being interviewed by Boomer. I'm like, he's gonna hit your ass. He didn't look happy. And, you know, is that act that Tim Tebow runs, is that shit for real? His off shucks act? Oh my God.
Oh, yeah. Terrifying. No. That's that butter wouldn't melt in my mouth Fundy act. I can't wait to get back to the Philippines and assist in some more circumcisions act.
Oh, no. I mean, it just made me feel nauseous looking at him. I'm like, ew. You know, who gets away with acting like that? I'm back to that lady from being there again. That is that kind of moment, you know?
What's the line again, Sandra?
She said, It's a white man's world in America. She's shaking her head, making noises. I mean, it's a fantastic clip from one of my favorite movies.
Oh, that is one of my favorite. You know what?
And she said he was shortchanged by the Lord, and you know, basically had like a thumb for a dick. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, just some shortchange or some crazy mess. Anyway, I shouldn't screw it all up, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I really need to get that movie and go and capture that little passage.
No, it's a I think I saved it at my on my YouTube page somewhere. I got to dig it up because that's like one of my favorites. That and when Peter Sellers is trying to change the channels on all them Negroes he runs up against. He's clicking the channel button. I was like, of the remote. That scene is excellent too. That's it's a really good movie.
Oh, it's a magnificent movie.
I think that writer died recently, actually.
No, that was Jerzy Kosinski, and he died a lot of years ago.
Oh, okay. Was that the guy who wrote
Unbearable Lightness of Being? I'm not
Did
sure.
Did he die recently? Anyway.
I don't know. Not sure.
So the football was good, and I see Peyton Manning, he made it through he's still walking, ain't he?
Yeah. Although, you know, like I said, they've got him auditioning for DirecTV ads with Dion.
Oh, when I saw that, I thought, you know what, they don't need to be showing nothing with that crazy, weird-ass Dion. He's a case, man. Fucking head case.
But he looks good in a little white fairy costume.
Oh, no. That commercial, it's funny, but it's just like, yikes. Oh, but in the meanwhile, though, who's the god in Washington, that quarterback? Are you kidding me?
Oh, RG3?
What the? Wow, is all I got to say about that.
Or RB3? Yeah.
Yeah, that's, you know. Of course, I'm in the car this morning going somewhere, and I accidentally turned on that horrible Colin Cowherd. What's he? He always has something negative to say.
Oh, he's the no. He's the resident Klansman of ESPN.
Because of course he had to bust out with something negative about that. I'm thinking you always talking like that about black folks. I'm sorry.
Oh, he used to ride Chad Ochocinco like a. It was disgusting.
Yeah, well, anyway.
And he still is.
Yeah, he came out. That was like the first thing he was talking about. I'm like, you know what, Cracker? You know, because then he went to the Andrew Luck, and it was a whole different tone. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
No, Colin Cowherd is about as right-wing as they come. I mean, you could, with Neil Bortz retiring, you could just drop him into the slot and never miss a lick.
Yeah, no. He really was, I was just like, no, this Cracker, he's too much. Anyway, listen, on that lovely note, have a good trip.
I'm going to try. I'll be here tomorrow night, too, though. So.
Oh, okay. Well,
All right. Thanks. Bye. Thanks, Andrew. Take care. Bye now. Yeah, Peyton Manning still walking. Bad night for Steelers fans. I haven't checked in with Boss Man Wayne to see if he's okay. 31-19, Denver over Pittsburgh. Bad, just bad. But it was nice to see the Lions beat St. Louis. The St. Louis listenership will be upset about me saying that. No, what Sandra mentioned, yeah, I had planned on this being sort of the capstone to the evening. We're not going to have a prayer meeting Wednesday, so we have to just, again, there's that word shoehorn. We have to shoehorn Brother Pat Robertson into Moran Monday. And frankly, this fits better than, and thank you, Isaac, for sending this along. This fits better in Moran Monday this particular evening than in, you know, prayer meeting Wednesday.
This first one comes from Michael, who says, my wife has become a real problem. She has no respect for me as the head of the house. She insults me. She even went as far as stretching her hand to beat me. I've lost my self-confidence. Her words hurt so much, and she refuses to talk through our problems. Please tell me what I can do.
Well, you could become a Muslim, then you could beat her.
But in lieu of that...
I don't think he was kidding. Jesus.
You don't want to go to Saudi Arabia?
No.
You know, I think this man's got to stand up to her. And he can't let her get away with this stuff. And, you know, I don't know. I don't think we condone wife beating these days, but something's got to...
Hit her again, Ike, and put a little stank on it. Wait, did he say, I don't think, but? Yeah, he did.
I don't think we condone wife beating these days, but something's got to be done to make her...
Not physically, but I mean, why would she not want to talk through their problems? That's
well,
so unlike...
She is just totally... she's rebellious. The chances are she was rebellious with her father and mother. She's a rebellious child, and she doesn't want to submit to any authority. And she probably had temper...
Right, because a woman who stands up for herself is a rebellious child. Do you understand how the so-called fundamentalist Christian authoritarianism works? Just checking.
Tantrums when she was a kid, and, you know...
Now, he's never met her, and he's telling us her life story.
The little girl, I hate you, and she wants to slap her father. Well, that's the same kind of thing. She's transferred the father now. She might... Oh, I hate to say everything's got to be some psychological counseling, but, you know...
Well, no, but I think you need a third party here.
Yeah, definitely, but that's the problem. She does not understand authority. When she was growing up, nobody made her behave. And now you've got a 13-year-old and a 30-year-old woman's body, and she is acting like a child. Yeah.
Not Pat Dobson. What's his last name? First name. Anyway, Dr. Dobson. Yeah, the one who wants guys to flash their little boys in the shower. She needs some third-party counseling is what she needs. Yeah, from a good Jesus-centered perspective. That just seemed to be the Moran Monday whipped cream on the cake. Or the cherry on the whipped cream. Yeah, whatever. But it is time to get out of here. Thank you, everyone, for... everything you do, just being here and participating and your ideas and everything that makes this whole effort so wonderful. Thank you. Back tomorrow night. And thanks to everybody who makes all of this go, beginning with you, and who contribute your time, your ideas, and, yes, the financial support that keeps this all going. Thank you. And thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, Texas Betsy, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox in Australia, and thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And, of course, thanks always go out to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AcheAct.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.